guy.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
You Ohio folks stick together.
Don't mess around.
Yeah, what is it about Ohio? We live. What is it about Ohio? All you Ohio guys, like Ohio? You know what? We're Cleveland, Columbus. You guys all stick together.
That's it, man. That's how we do it, man. Just good people. You know,
even when you won the title, you're like, Cleveland, we got a champ.
Yeah, OHIO.
What is it about Ohio? Why does everybody love it so much?
I don't know, man. I just think it's the mentality of people. They're just, the people are awesome. You know, I don't know. It's just hard to explain. I think you just got to live there. Like, you know, there's people that have lived in other states and moved to Cleveland or Ohio, and they're like, man, you know, I get it now. I see why you guys, like, you guys are so, like, in depth with each other. You guys are awesome. Like, you guys love each other. I'm like, yeah, man, we just, it's like its own nation.
It is weird. Like, Columbus in particular is, like, one of my favorite places to visit. It's, like, one of the, it's like, I get the weather sucks a lot. I get it. But the people are so damn nice. Like, it's, like, overall, it's, like, it's a really good spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Columbus, too. I've had a bunch of blurry nights there, you know. Down there, I went to Brothers and all that good stuff. But I love Columbus too. It's one of, you know, I love going down there, and especially for, like, we go down to Arnold and stuff like that.
Right,
just checking it out, and, you know, they have a couple of MMA fights and local shows too. A lot of our coaches go down there for local MMA shows.
Remember when they used to do the UFC with the Columbus, mm-hmm. with the Arnold?
Yeah,
that was a big event. That was a big. I wonder why that stopped. Yeah, that was always a lot of fun.
I remember the one time that Strikeforce there. That's when Ronda Rousey.
Pull the sucker up.
Sorry, I suck at this. This is my first podcast. Be gentle.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How the fuck is the heavyweight champion of the world never been on a podcast before?
Well, I've been on a podcast like over the phone, but not like in studio. Yeah, yeah. So, but I think it was Strikeforce is when Rousey and Tate fought, and that's when she dislocated her elbow.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that one of them? I
think that was one of them. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Back in the day. So what's it like walking around the UFC heavyweight champion of the world? How's that feel?
Feels good. It doesn't really matter in my household. I'm like fourth on the ladder. It's my wife, then the two dogs, and then me. I'm there just to pay bills.
It feels like that sometimes, right?
Yeah.
It's the money machine. But so is everything good now? You're finally got a title fight. You finally got a real challenger in Francis Ngannou on January 20th. How do you feel about this?
I think he's a great fighter. You know, definitely he brings it. It's hard, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, nothing's going to change. I'm walking out with the belt still wrapped around my waist. I mean, you know, I'm excited for him. You know, he's going to shot. But as long as I'm here, no one's going to be champ.
Damn. You have to have that mentality. What do you think about him that's unusual? What about him, other than the size and the strength, what stands out?
I mean, his power, I guess, you know, but I think everyone hits hard in the heavyweight division. I mean, 260-pound man, 250-pound man. I mean, you're not supposed to be hit by something like that. And, you know, I fought JDS, I fought Ronald Nelson, I fought Mark Hunt. I mean, I got guys who, you know, do hard.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he's a little wild too, which is, that's tough. You know, sometimes you can't prepare for that. Because there's punches you don't see.
The punch he hit Alistair with, that wild left hook.
Yeah.
Swings wide.
100%. Yeah. Well, I think that was a little bit of both on both ends. And I think Overeem was just kind of being a little sloppy and then just put his face right in the lane. And
yeah, Overeem's got a weird style now, right? It's a totally different style over the last couple of years, you know? But he does awkward stuff. You know, like when you fought him, how did you feel?
Well, when I fought him, he was like very traditional, moving around, running, but like kept, you know, keeping his distance. I'm like, all right, cool, it's a fight, you know? And then, you know, he tried that lunging, I don't know what kind of kick to my thigh, and I grabbed it in time and took him down. But, you know, I mean, I didn't watch the whole fight with Ngannou, but what I saw was he's throwing all these wild punches.
I'm like,
you know, when he fought me, he was throwing straights, and, you know, he wasn't really, you know.
I think with Ngannou, it was almost like he felt like he could not get hit, which was correct, right? So he just decided to be just completely wild and unpredictable. I mean, he threw that wild lunging left hand to start the fight off and then got the clinch immediately, but wasn't able to do anything with it.
Yeah, I'll find out January 20th, you know. I think I'll be all right, but, you know, I'm the best coach in the world, you know. I'm pretty confident walking in there. You know, he's a big dude, throws hard, I mean, but that's every heavyweight. I mean, it doesn't take much.
Well, the only time we've seen him on his back was which fight was it that he got taken down? Was it Curtis Blades took him down? Yeah. That was his first UFC fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was an interesting fight, right? You got a chance to see. But it's hard to see when a guy's real young in MMA. It's hard to see a fight from 3 years ago or whatever that was and then look at him and say, well, that's the same guy today, because it's not.
This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for something to do this summer, you might want to check out some of the upcoming fights. Even better, if you can catch them up close in person. It's quite an experience. But if you want to get the best seats, you have to act fast. And that's true for a lot of things in life, especially when it comes to hiring for your business. You need to hire the most talented people you can before the competition scoops them up. And to do that, you need ZipRecruiter. And luckily, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Got your eye on a rock star candidate? ZipRecruiter's invite to apply feature lets you cut the line. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. So, amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan to try it for free right now. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Guys, you're responsible for taking care of you, and that means spending some time cleaning yourself up. But I know that can be a challenge, especially when you're not sure what products or razors to use. So to help you get started, I want to recommend Manscaped. They can help you take care of all your grooming needs, even when it comes to your more sensitive areas, or as our friends at Manscaped like to call them, the boys. Their trimmers, the Lawnmower 3.0 Plus, 4.0 Pro, and 5.0 Ultra are all equipped with skin-safe technology to help reduce the risk of grooming accidents. They're also waterproof and come with an LED spotlight so you can actually see what you're shaving. And I know that summer's coming, which means vacations and traveling for a lot of you. Well, Manscaped has you covered. Their trimmers come with a convenient travel case that you can easily pack and bring along. For the best you and your boys have ever looked, trust Manscaped. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code Rogan at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code Rogan at manscaped.com. Tap the banner to learn more. Skin-safe technology does not guarantee cut protection. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely changed in the past couple of months.
Oh,
I mean,
for sure. It's just,
you know, I think, you know, he's definitely gotten better. There's no question. But, you know, we'll see what happens, you know. Listen, I'm going out there for broke, you know. I'm going out there to win.
You always do.
Yeah.
Now, this is January 20th, and right now, what was this, December 13th or something? What's today's date?
Second.
Second?
Yeah, it's December 2nd.
No, today's not the 2nd.
Oh, today. I'm talking about their fight. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, today. Like, 13th. The 13th, yeah. So, like, how much time did you have to prep for this?
Well, I've been prepping. You know, I've been working out. I've been, you know, staying in shape. And
so, did you have a feeling that January was going to be the card?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, when the UFC lets you know, like, how do they do that? How does that work?
Usually contact my manager, like, hey, you know, that's what we're thinking, mm-hmm. You know. I think you'd be ready. So, you know, I was a little beat up after the JDS fight, you know, with my shin and everything. Not just my shin, but I had other things and just had to heal up. That's why it took me a while. You know, everyone thinks I'm just trying to hold on to the belt and just, you know.
Who the fuck says that?
All the time.
They're fuck like, them. Oh, don't yeah. listen to that.
I don't even respond.
I don't respond.
I think it's funny. I think it's great.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It. But
you fought everybody.
Yeah, it is what it is. What are you going to do? I can't make everyone happy. But yeah, man, you know, I was beat up a little bit and just had a lot going on. And so, you know, now here we are.
The JDS fight was interesting, right? Because that shin was swelling up hardcore,
yeah,
man.
I couldn't believe that. Like,
yeah.
I felt fine. All of a sudden, I'm like, man, it doesn't feel right. You know, I could feel, like, the rush of, like, blood in my mm-hmm. shin. And I'm like, They kicked me again. I'm like, I checked it. And I'm like, oh, my God, that hurt. I got to end this. And so I was, like, chasing them down and finding my opportunity. And, you know, and thank God I got it. But
it's so interesting that after all these years in MMA, a new trend surfaces. And that trend is the low leg kick. The low leg kick to the shin and the calf area. It's devastating.
Yeah.
Now, you saw it with Benson Henderson, I think, was the first guy to really bring it to the UFC and really, like, make it a big part of his arsenal. But, you know, you're seeing it with so many guys now. The low leg kick is just a giant technique.
sucks.
It fucking sucks, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can't condition that part of your leg. It's not the same.
Anyway, I think some people are different. Some people, it's going to be real bad. I think some people, it's not going to be as bad. Like, for me, it sucked. Like, it was terrible. Like, going up the stairs after that fight was, like, the hardest thing ever. Just trying to straighten
it. Almost looked like your leg was broken. Like, it swole up so quick, I was wondering if you had, like, the fibula was cracked or something like that.
Yeah, my doctor actually was super pumped about it because he was like, oh, my God, look how deep this bone bruise is. This is amazing.
he was really
so pumped, yeah. he's a trainer with us, so he's a good dude, and he just loved it. He showed my coach. My coach was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm like,
so what did he, like, put it on an MRI or something like that?
Yeah, he took an x-ray, and I think it was an x-ray or something like that, and he saw the pictures, and he's like, man, this is a deep bone bruise. Like, this is the deepest you get. You know, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that, you know, you think of all the techniques in martial arts, that this technique becomes, like, a prominent technique in 2016, 2017.
Yeah, you know, I'm still trying to work on my jab. You know, that's what I'm working on right now in 2016. So hopefully that takes off for a while. No, but, yeah, it's funny how, you know, mixed martial arts, there's one thing, and then, like, you know, when it started, you know, there was one guy who's a wrestler, one guy jiu-jitsu, one guy. But now it's, you know, trending and trending more and more. And then, you know, you got guys who are, like, you know, sprawl and brawl or,
yeah,
you know, it's crazy watching how the sport evolves. It's amazing, actually.
Well, you're an interesting case because you're a guy who does everything, right? You're not a one sport specialist. Like, you didn't come in as a kickboxing champ like Overeem or like Mark Hunt. You know, you came into the sport with everything. You know, you're one of the new guys where essentially, you know, you do everything. You know, you're not a specialist.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I wrestled my whole life, and then, you know, actually, it was my coach, actually, who made it better, because when I started training with mixed martial arts, he literally was like, I would take everyone down. I'm like, oh, this is easy. I'm
right.
Crap by everyone. He's like, no, amigo. He's like, every time you say take someone down, I'm going to stand right back up, so you're learning how to fight. I'm like, oh. And I just got the crappy out of me for, you know, a while until I started, like, learning how to use my hands better, and then, you know, I took a little time off just to do Golden Gloves boxing, and, you know, here we are.
When did you start?
MMA?
Yeah.
Ooh. 10 years ago? 10 years? 9 years ago?
That's not that long when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're the UFC heavyweight champ.
Yeah. And so, I took a year and a half off just for boxing.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Just to learn how to use your hands better. Yeah. It's probably a good move, right?
It was great. Probably the best move I did.
Especially coming in with a wrestling background. But you have an overall athletic background, too. Like, you paid baseball. You know, you're a multi-sport guy.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah. I tried, but, yeah, you know, I definitely wrestle. You know, the wrestling does help me out, you know, MMA. Cause,
sure,
you know,
of course.
I always use that. And, you know, I think baseball definitely helps me out, too, just because of the reaction and the way I use my hips and stuff like that. It definitely helps me with mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I would imagine. You know, I think that having a bunch of different skills, like have you, I'm sure you're a boxing fan. Did you watch the Lomachenko?
God, that guy's fucking amazing.
Ogandia fight?
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, you swear, go fucking crazy.
Fuck your cock balls. Okay, I'm good.
There you go. I mean, what I thought was fascinating about the commentary, they were talking about how his dad made him take 4 years off and just do Ukrainian dancing. That's how he got his footwork.
Really?
Yeah. His father said, you want to be a fighter? He goes, well, you're going to take 4 years off of fighting and just learn traditional Ukrainian dancing. Yeah. I mean, his fucking father's a wizard, man.
I mean, he did something right.
He nailed it.
Yeah.
He nailed it.
I mean,
and they, you know, they asked his dad, like, when did you know that he was going to be the champion? He said, before he was conceived. Like, holy shit. That's some Russian shit right there.
Right.
That's some Ukrainian dark.
Oh, my God. Like,
Soviet Union type shit.
Just watching that guy. I mean, dude, watching that dude, though, like, honestly, like, it's like poetry. He's like,
everything, even body shots. Like,
yeah.
He slides out of the way of body shots. He slides out of the way of body shots the way, like, a Muay Thai guy slides away from leg kicks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
He's just moved so much different than anybody I've ever seen box before.
And then, like, listen, his last four opponents, the coaches threw the towel in.
Yeah.
That's
like fuck this. Fuck this. This is terrible.
If I was fighting that dude, I'd be like, I'm done. Not even going to walk in the ring. Not even going to round in. I'm like, we're going to call it a day.
It's just, I'm wondering, but I think he's one of those guys that's like a bar raiser, right? Like, where he's just raised the bar, where people look at what footwork is, and they look at that guy and go, okay, this is not just like moving around a lot. Everything's so purposeful. Like, when he turned around him, when Rigondeaux, like, he put his hand on his head and then spun all the way around him, Rigondeaux's like, what in the fuck is going on here?
And he's a smaller guy.
Yes.
And he's like, what's going on?
Exactly.
That's crazy, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah, because it's not like he got out, like struck by a bigger, heavier power puncher. No, he got the shit boxed out of him. Like it was just pop, pop, double jab, pop, pop. Oh, where is he? He's over here. Crazy.
I mean, just like watching that guy. I mean, sorry, I'm trying to get comfortable here. Yeah, I mean, just it's that guy. Just it's like I'm so happy to be like alive to watch this. Cause, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, because you're like I was there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I watch videos on that guy all the time.
Yeah, there he is, right there. Yeah. I mean, just the fucking guy barely gets hit. I mean, there's no one like him in boxing because what he's doing is he's standing literally right in front of you and he's unavailable. It's not like he's like dancing all over the place and moving away. He's doing some shit and doing it in a way that nobody else is doing. Like Floyd had a lot of shoulder rolls and he's slick as fuck and Floyd stands right in front of you too and you know, he ties people up and shit. But what Lomachenko's doing is just some total next level shit.
Yeah. I mean, look what he does. He just throws his hand drops. He don't care. You know, he knows he's going to get out of the way.
Yeah, he does a lot of very interesting stuff. But I'm wondering, like, if we're going to see this in the future now. I mean, you know, obviously when Ali came along, a bunch of guys started imitating Ali.
Yeah.
You know, when Tyson came along, a bunch of guys tried to imitate Tyson. You always see that.
Yeah.
I wonder how many guys are going to figure out a way to take that to the next level.
Yeah, I think some guys are going to take it to, like, not to that. I mean, I don't know if everyone's going to catch that level. That's just...
Well, that you know what the next level is? That, but with, like, Roy Jones Jr. power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if someone figures out a way to move like that, with that kind of footwork, but that one punch, go to sleep, you know, knockout power.
That'd be sick.
Yeah. That's probably the next level.
Hopefully I'm alive for that, too.
We'll see it. I mean, this is an amazing time for all combat sports, I think. I think the bar, like... I think with all sports, right, like if you look back at the olden days, you look back at today, the athletes are bigger, they know how to train better, they're faster. But I think anywhere that's more apparent than MMA, I feel like MMA is like the best example because it's so new.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, like you said, like it's always something always evolving. Like, you know, I mean, like what was it, John Jones used to have a teep to the thigh.
Yeah.
Know, like that, you know, a couple years ago. And then like everyone started doing it. And then, you know, like Benson Henderson doing the you know, I mean, just, I don't know. I just love it because it's always evolving. You know, you literally cannot take like 2 months off, and if you do, people are going to pass you up.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. It's like there's different schools of thought, right? There's like the AKA school where you have all these killers in one room, and you have like world champions beating up world champions, and then you have your gym, which is much more specialized. You know, it's like you're the big guy to emerge from your gym, and then it's been Jessica Eye and some other high level MMA fighters coming out of your gym. But that's a lot of people think that's the way to go, to have specialized training like Max Holloway has, specialized training where, like, you know, there's not – you're not dealing with a bunch of people that are already champs. You're building champs.
Yeah, that's right. Like, we're a lot – like, my gym's awesome. Like, my coach, Marcus Marinelli, he – it's like all homegrown, man. Guys come in and he just makes them better. We all you know, even like, you know, I don't get any specialized training like to anyone else. Like, I don't go out, you know, everything's just pushed aside because the guy, you know, like if the dude's got a fight, they're going first, then I go. You know, I'm not better than anyone else. Yes, you know, I'm the heavyweight champ. I don't look at it that way. I look at it like, all right, you got a fight coming up, you go first. We'll push my training back later. I don't care. But yeah, like, it's just great watching, like, you know, our gym, like, guys coming in, they're like, oh, yeah, I want to train. And all of a sudden, you're like, they come out like a few months later, and these guys are killers. You're like, Jesus. Right. Like, you know, we have a Kenny Alexi, a 205 pounder kid's an animal. Like, he keeps me young. I had to, like, he just turned pro. He's in his third pro fight. And I'm like, God dang. I come in some days, I'm like,
whew. Like, isn't it interesting how there's guys like that in the gym, and then for whatever reason, it never clicks for them? Like, there's some guys that are just so insanely talented, but they just don't have whatever it is, whether it's focus, whether it's the discipline to keep going when things get weird, to just finally realize their potential. Like, what separates a guy like that, that's like a gym killer, from a guy like you who can perform under the bright lights?
You know, when I was fighting UFC, and I don't mean the whole story here, but so when I was, you know, fighting, you know, I was like 9-0. I lost to Struve, and I thought I was unstoppable, and Struve beat me. I'm like, I almost didn't want to fight anymore. I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this anymore. And then came back, fought Roy Nelson. You know, I had a couple more fights, and then I lost to JDS. And literally, when I walked in the back locker room, I was just like, I'm done. And I'm like, I don't even care anymore. Like, I don't even care what happens. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to train. And all I'm going to do is put it all out there. If I'm going to win, I'm going to lose. I don't really care. It, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. You know, but I'm going to go out there and get my damnedest to win, and I'm going to do whatever I got to do, and I just don't care.
So, but something switched in your head. Mm-hmm. Well, you can kind of see it, like when you're doing. One of the things I've always said about you, when you walk out to fights and during the stare down, you're like stoic. You're like, you give them dead eyes. You're just like, you're like, you're there, here we go. Like when you fought Verdum, in Brazil and knocked him out in the first round. It's like you look at it, your face while you're standing there. It's like you might be waiting in line at the fucking car wash. You know, I mean, you could be anywhere.
Yeah.
You're not mean mugging him. You almost got like that Fedor face going on where you're just like, here we are.
Yeah, you know, I think I get that dead face from like when my wife yells at me. So it's kind of like, I looked at a lot of, like, I just stopped caring. I'm like, you know what, I'm not gonna like over like get emotional about stuff. Like, I don't care. Like, all I care about is like, I'm married, I got a beautiful wife, she takes care of me. End of the day, no matter what happens in this fight game, she's gonna be there for me. She likes me for, you know, who I am, not because I fight. She likes me because, you know, I make her laugh, I, you know, do good things for her, she does good, you know, I mean, just like, right. like a marriage should be. And you know, and like she was there before all this, you know, all this stuff happened. So like, she's not like a, what do they call it? What's the word?
Gold digger.
There we go. Yeah, gold digger. That, well, I couldn't think of that. I'm an idiot. But yeah, something like that. You know, she's been there the whole time, and you know, that's what I love about her. And you know, and I just stopped.
So you're anchored.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I just stopped caring. I just like, who cares if I lose? I lose. You know, but I'm gonna go out there. I'm very competitive, so I'm gonna go out there and do whatever I gotta do to win.
Yeah, Randy Couture said that once. He was talking to young fighters, and he was saying, you can't be worried about losing. The people who love you are always going to love you. You're not going to lose anything. You're just going to lose a contest. And if you're entering into something like a mixed martial arts fight, someone's got to win and someone's going to lose. And you got to learn from those losses. And, you know, some of those losses, that devastating feeling, like I'm sure was there for you after this Struve fight, that the rebuild from that is what makes real champions.
Yeah, you know, definitely. it helped a little bit. My mom, actually took my mom there. She didn't go to the fight. She never seen me fight. But, like, so, you know, in London, they got those big double-decker buses.
Right.
So we're going back, and then my head's like, it's throbbing. I'm like, oh, God, this sucks. I'm driving back, and my coach are next to me. He's trying to make me laugh. We're all sitting there talking. And I look out the window at the hotel, and my mom's smoking a cigarette. And she's like, I'm like, I looked at my buddies. I'm like, am I in fucking high school right now? Like, who does that? You know, and I get that right there, like, made me feel better. Like you said, like, no matter what happens, you know, always going to be.
Yeah.
You know, someone's going to be, no matter what happens, they're going to love you no matter what.
Yeah, your family's always your family. Your friends are always your friends. And if they're not, they were never really your friends in the first place.
Exactly.
You're probably better off that way. Sometimes it's good to have some losses just so you realize who's just going to abandon you.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
It makes sense. So do you have any mental coaching? Do you do anything like that?
I did for a little bit back in the day after the Struve fight. I think it was the Struve fight. I talked to a sports psychologist, which it turned into about a minute talking about fighting. The next was about my personal life. It had nothing to do with sports. It was just
really
just all I talked about. It was just by half an hour. Just I did it a few times and I walked every time, and that's when I started getting that mentality. Like, why do I care anymore? Like, I just stopped caring. Like, not you know, I don't care anymore. Like
what was he trying to?
She.
Sorry, I'm a sexist.
No, that's okay.
Immediately assumed it's an expert. Must be a man. How could a woman know anything? Such a piece of shit I am.
But when you think about
that's a critical component in keeping your mental state together, right? That's one of the things that a lot of people will talk about, like having a good support group around you, having a support system, family, friends, real loved ones. So in her examining that, do you think she was trying to like reinforce like what matters and what's important?
You know, I never actually thought about it that way.
Maybe she's just nosy.
Maybe. But I've known her. I've known her for a while.
Okay.
So, I thought about it, but we'd just start talking. She'd just be like, so, let's talk. I'm like,
right.
And I started talking about fighting. I'm like, yo, this, nah. And then I'm like, you know, and then my girlfriend, the girl at the time, I was like, she's doing this to me. You know what I mean? And she's like, psycho. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, but literally I walked down, I felt like so much better. Not even just because of the fighting. I think it needed to clear all that stuff out. Just needed to get my mind straight.
They say that for people who go to shrinks. Like if you go to a psychiatrist, I've never gone, but if you go, like the best thing is just to talk about it. Like most people just keep things bottled up inside. They don't have anybody to talk to about a lot of the shit that's going on inside their head.
Yeah. That was my problem when I was younger, actually. You know, like, especially, like, my wife, the one thing that made us better was that I had to communicate. Because I was like, she'd get mad at me. I'm like,
you just bottled
I would
up.
Just hold it. And finally, one day, I'm like, ah, she's like, whoa. That was like 2 weeks ago. Like, calm down, dude. You know what I mean? I was like, well, you told me that, you know, and then now it's just talking to that lady and just opening up more. And just when something bothers me, I, you know, she hates it now because I'm like, listen, you know, you need to do this. Like, you know, she'll go, oh, what's up, tough guy? You know,
now but, you're a full-time firefighter too, as well as being the UFC heavyweight champion. How do you balance that?
Well, I'm part-time actually at two departments.
But, oh, okay.
You know, but just, it's just tough because being full-time, you know, I didn't get hired full-time, so I couldn't, you know, it'd be tough to do both. You know, if I did before, it'd be a lot easier, but I can't just take a test because you have to do probation year-long and then you can't
right.
fight.
So while you're fighting, you work part-time, and do you have it set up where, you know, like you tell them in advance, like, hey, I got a January 20th fight?
Yeah. So yeah. Like, I already picked my schedule. So a month in advance, like one station, I pick it within the first week. I pick my whole month, and then the next station we go like seniority. So when I come up, I pick my schedule, so I make sure that you know it's already picked out. So I literally work probably 5 times in about 2 weeks.
Now
12-hour shift.
How much does that get in the way of your training?
Never.
Never.
Nope.
No. How's that work?
Just the way I pick my schedule. If I had to do, I could trade someone, or someone's coming in, I make it work. And they're amazing people. Like those both stations are amazing. The Chiefs are great. The guys that work, actually a lot of them are coming to the fight January 20th. So,
yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing about firefighters is that a lot of times you get those 24-hour shifts. You know, and where you know you get a chance to work out, you can cook. Mm-hmm. You know, hanging out with guys. It's like once the duties are done around the firehouse, right?
Yeah, I play a lot of Call of Duty.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. I'm like. They're losing a 10-year-old kid.
It's a crazy job because when you have to do something, what you have to do is so extreme, and what's demanded of you is just insane. Like, I'm sure you've been paying attention to what's going on just a few miles from here.
Yeah.
In Ventura. It's out of control.
You know what's crazy is that we just went past the, was it Getty Boulevard?
Yeah, Getty Center.
I saw that. It looked like it was like Armageddon. And mm-hmm. then we just passed it today, and it was, like, burnt. You know, it was nuts. Like, a couple of days ago, that's what it would look like. I mean, it was, like, shocking.
Well, L.A. is a fucking mess. You know, the beautiful thing about California is we don't have any weather.
Yeah.
You know, it never rains. But the terrible thing is once it gets crispy, and the other night, you know, when this was all happening, I was at my house and the wind was blowing like ridiculous. They were calling it a dry hurricane because the wind was so crazy. Trees were falling down all over the place. And the thought was, man, if a fire gets lit here, we're fucked.
Yeah.
And then, boom, they start popping up.
Well, it was a natural, like just from being
dry? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of psychos out there. I think there's a lot of fucking people that recognize these are crazy fire conditions and they just want to light something on fire and they do and they step away and then next thing you know, it's a 300,000 acre fire.
It's crazy.
I think there's accidents for sure, but I think for sure some of this is arson.
Well, that was within what, a day or two of all those ones burning?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's
kind
of weird.
How is that possible?
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, there's a bunch of fucking psychos out there. That's what I think. I think there's definitely some accidents, and obviously those winds exacerbate anything that would have been a small fire. Like, there was a small fire in my neighborhood a couple months ago, but it wasn't windy, and the firefighters jumped on it quick, and they put the house down. But, man, when the winds were the way they were, I mean, you were having chunks of embers that were flying 600-700 yards away, flying through the air, this and that, and everywhere. There was no way they could stay on top of it.
Yeah, that's like scary. You know what I mean?
Terrifying.
Like, we have like brush fires.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing about Ohio.
Yeah, right now, I think we got like 6 or 7 inches
yeah.
of snow, so.
Yeah, listen, man, snow, you just need snow tires.
That's it.
You know, warm clothes, snow tires, you're good. Fucking firestorms. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean that's like, oh god, that's scary, man. Like just reading about it and just seeing it and just seeing the pictures, just, you know, you feel terrible for the people. You know, we actually have friends in San Diego. They had to get evacuated.
Yeah,
they said there was 85% chance that their house would be gone.
Jesus.
They came back and within a tenth of a mile the fire stopped.
They got lucky.
Yeah,
I've been evacuated twice.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's scary, but, you know, you just got to get out quick. Throw the dogs in the back. Let's go. Fuck it.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, part of it's like cleansing. Like, all that stuff in your house is not you. Your fucking TV or your clothes, that's not you. You're you.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be all
right. It's a materialistic thing. Yeah. You always buy a new one.
Yeah, just fucking stay with your grandmother for a while. You'd be fine. Yeah, I mean, everybody will live. Right. As long as you get out, you're all right. You'll rebuild, get back. It's not a good thing to lose everything that you work for, but sometimes it's a good thing to know that you are vulnerable, you know, like in these fires. Like, I think it's one thing that L.A. is missing is humility that's brought on by the weather. Like, you know how it is in Cleveland. When it fucking snows, right? When it snows out and it's thick, there's that feeling in the air where everybody calms down, right? Everybody's like, okay. Like, there's no one driving like a fucking crazy psychopath when it's snow. Everybody's going real kind of slow and steady. Your back tires are kicking out a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That keeps people humble.
Yeah, we actually, was it the weekend of, was it? Which one, New York, Madison Square Garden, which one was that, UFC what?
What was that? What number was that?
I don't know. 211?
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever it was. Yeah. So I'm coming home. My wife's like, hey, you know, there's a huge storm coming. She's like, you know. I'm like, cool. So she calls me again. At my house, we have actually a built-in generator, so if the power goes out.
Oh, that's nice.
So I'm like, sweet, dude, awesome. So every Saturday I would hear it kick on. I'm like, awesome, the thing works, great. Of course, the timer needs to work. The power goes out, it's dead.
Ooh.
So the battery busted on it, but so we came home and I came home and I flew home that night and it was like a zombie apocalypse, man. It was like stuff everywhere, like it was all dark. There was trees like on top of everything. It was crazy. And then they said like 15 tornadoes touched down within between Indiana, Ohio, and PA. And so we came to my house and it was like half. I have one big tree in my yard. I have 8.5 acres. And I have one big tree that magically got split in half.
Wow.
Then our barn. We have a barn. It's like it has like a little soften on the side. That all got, like half of it got ripped down. It was crazy. Like, I mean, there was like so much stuff. Like, we had a gazebo that got ripped down. Like, you know, like you said, but yeah, but it's humbling because, you know, like, you're not safe. So, but at least we found out that the generator didn't work. No, we're good. Because it actually worked the other day. It was so windy that the power went out and it actually kicked down. I was like, oh, good.
Yeah, there's something that like that's comforting about hearing that. When I lived in Colorado, we had a generator. The power would go out and you're like, ooh, yeah. I'm okay. I'm safe. Yeah. Are you handy? Do you fix shit? Like,
oh,
you going to fix the garage?
No, I have my buddy Rick. Actually, he was over the other day. I was like, hey, he said, what's that, man? I'm like, hey. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm coming to your house. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, talk to your wife. She needs you to fix something. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll see you after the gym. So he comes over and does that for me. I mean, I do help him out, but it's all him.
You're lucky.
Yeah.
Lucky to know somebody who can fix shit.
Yeah, I'm terrible at that stuff, man. I'm like, I make it worse.
Well, especially if you live in a place like where there's fucking tornadoes. Like, is there a tornado-proof house? Can you make a house like, remember like Three Little Pigs? You remember? Like the guy with the bricks.
You can make a shelter to the ground. You can make a little shelter to the ground, I guess. I don't know. You know, I don't like a little, I don't know. Like little doors. I have no idea.
Right, like Wizard of Oz type shit.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to go. You'd have to make something that like was underground, right?
Yeah.
Like some underground dudes have that. Remember when we were kids? Like a lot of guys had, like not a lot of guys, but people were talking about building bomb shelters in their backyard.
Yeah,
that was like a big.
It's kind of like that. Yeah, kind of like that thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My basement's pretty. It's not bad. It's got a few like cinder block windows, like the.
Right.
Whatever, that's about it. I mean,
so you probably survived down there.
Yeah, good. Plus, we have like a little area in the two with like with like the furnace and stuff, so we can hide in there. Nothing will.
Do you work out at home at all?
No, God no.
No.
Yeah, I have a 3,000 square foot barn with radiant heat, so it's like warm all year round. You know, it's awesome. And I was like, dude, you should put a cage in there to train. I'm like, hell no. I'm like, this is my sanctuary. This is where I go and I watch TV and I relax and. I do fun stuff, you know, like, no, I'm not bringing anything. My wife does. My wife, you know, she has some Onnit stuff. We have her little kettlebells and her little, you know, stuff like that. She loves it. So, you know, she has a treadmill yet, and she just does her thing there.
Yeah, that's probably a good attitude, right, to burn it all out in the gym, and then home is peace.
Yep. As peaceful as it can be, you know. If I piss off the wife, then it's not so peaceful.
How do you relax? Like, when you're the UFC heavyweight champion of the world, like, that's a tremendous amount of pressure and stress.
Play some Call of Duty, I don't know, just hang out. I just chill. I don't do much. Like, you know, John Volante, I play with him online with a bunch of guys from New York. We just sit there and talk smack, talk shit to little kids, and make yourself feel better, you know?
Imagine you getting your shit, if you're playing online Call of Duty, and the UFC heavyweight champion's talking shit to you. What the fuck?
My buddy was actually, we were playing one time with my buddy Nate, and he's like, guys, like, yeah, you're all gonna come over and kick your ass. My buddy's like, just let me do it. I'm like, shh, don't you I can say a word. I'm like, just let him have his moment, you know?
Come over and kick your ass. Yeah, that's
I mean, it's so funny to get direct messages and stuff like that. You know, you're a terrible person.
Threatening you?
Oh, yeah. Like, you're such a noob. And, you know, you're like, I don't know where you live. I fucking find you and I kill you. I'm like, ugh.
It's so funny. You imagine the thought that would go through their head if they found out who the fuck they were talking to. Well, the horror when you're some 14-year-old shit talking kid, I'll fucking come to your house, stick my dick in your mouth. And like, and you find out you're talking to the UFC heavyweight champ. You're like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Jesus, Lord. That's like, what have I done?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I remember we were in Vegas, funny like that. Like, some guy had no idea. Like, not being like talking shit, but we went to like a Bud Light party and we went up to like this one mansion. It was crazy. We were having fun. They had like a bunch of different Elvis Presleys, whatever. They had like all these models they hired. Some with my wife and we're hanging out. And I'm like sitting there like just looking straight, like not looking around because like, you know, there's a lot of good-looking girls. I'm like this. You know, and so anyway, I'm like, all right, babe, you want anything? I'm going to go get some macaroni and cheese. She's like, yeah, because they like very randomly I'll never forget that macaroni and cheese. I went to get some macaroni and cheese, and I came back, and this dude talking to my wife. And I'm like, So I'm like, it turns around. I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. Like, he was being nice. My wife was like, he was being nice. He just asked me what I was doing. Like, but he had no idea I was with her. You know,
yeah, what a disaster.
Yeah, it was actually pretty funny. That guy, like, literally, like, pissed his pants. It was the greatest thing ever.
Do people treat you any different around the fire station, or is it pretty normal?
It's gotten worse.
Worse?
Yeah, they treat me like garbage. They're like, you know, like I always say, they give me a plunger, like, hey, go to town, champ. I'm like
really?
You know, yeah, they don't care.
That's funny.
Yeah, but they're good guys. I mean, I love them. They, both stations, they're just, you know, Oakland and Valley View, those guys are just, they're just good guys. They're just always, you know, like, they actually, when I fought in Brazil, so they couldn't go to the fight, so they flew to Vegas and had their own watch party in Vegas to watch the fight. You know,
how convenient. They couldn't stay in Ohio. They had to go to Vegas. Yeah, honey, I got to go to Vegas to support Stipe. He's fighting in Vegas? No. He's in Brazil, but the hookers are in Vegas.
Yeah.
I got to go where I got to go.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, they're great guys. I mean, they're just, you know, as I, you know, became champ, they really don't care. I felt bad for them, though, because, like, really, so I... You won the title on Saturday. I flew in on Monday. I got home Monday, and I think worked Wednesday at the one station. And literally, like, everyone found out, and that phone did not stop ringing at the doorbell. And they were like looking at me like, are you serious, you motherfucker? This is, we're supposed to be taking naps right now. Like, you know, ding dong.
Where's
ding
the
dong.
Champ?
Oh, I felt so, like, they understood, but I felt really bad because, like, I wanted to relax too, you know?
Didn't they have, like, a little parade for you?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was not a little parade. It was I was in the
yeah, I'm joking.
Oh,
it was big.
Yeah, it was pretty big. 1.3 million or 6 million, whatever.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was so hot too. Like, the UFC's like, hey dude, here's a jersey. I'm like, are you serious right now? You want me to wear this black jersey right now?
They're
like,
wanted to wear one of them Reebok kits?
Yeah, oh, it was so hot. It was like 90 degrees. I'm like, whew. I was struggling. I was supposed to, it was so bad. But it was cool, man. There was, you know, everyone screaming and like, it was so many people. It was just, it was great to see, you know?
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sweating like a pig.
That was so bad.
Is it weird, like, walking around the street now? Like, what is normal life for you? Normal?
Normal, man. Everyone's so nice. They don't like, run me and like, oh, what's up, man? They're just like, hey, good to see you, champ. How you doing? Like,
is there any, do you think there's any benefit to keeping a day job? Do you think, like, in any way it's, like, good for your head or anything?
I think so. I definitely think so. I think it keeps me grounded because, you know, we don't always talk about fighting, you know, but, like, it just, you know, I have other things to worry about. I don't have to worry about fighting and this and that. It keeps my mind off of it. But I think also, too, there's always a plan B, you know. I could walk out of here, trip and fall and break my hand and never fight again. You just never know.
So that's why you keep the job?
Yeah, a little bit, but I really work hard and make my mom proud. You know, I just, plus I love helping people. You know, my whole life, like I said, I've been helped. And so it's my, because I was thinking about being a Coast Guard, a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddies were like, dude, check out the fireman, dude. It's a great job. Looked at him like, yeah, get full time, 24 round, 48 off. It's awesome. That's awesome, right, man. Like, who doesn't want to do that? And then, yeah, so. Yeah,
but like some people would say, like, to be at the top of your game, you literally must devote all of your time to it all the time, and that you wouldn't have enough time to work a regular job.
No, I mean, I make it work, man. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, I work a lot of Sundays. I'll do 24 hours on Sundays.
So, like, if you just hit the lottery tomorrow, and you got $100 million.
I'm out.
You'd quit.
Oh, yeah. I'm out. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
But that's the point. Like, what if, you know, say – You continue your title run and you make more and more money, become a giant superstar like you deserve to be, and you start making those Conor McGregor checks. You going to keep that job?
Yeah.
Really?
I will. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, no, if I win the lottery.
You get a lot of hit-ups for loans. That's going to happen.
Trust me. Already been there, done that. Everyone thinks I'm
sure.
Dude, it's so bad. I'm like, it's like my family. I'm like, bro, I'm like, my family don't even bother me. I'm like, this is great. But like friends and stuff, like, Jesus, really?
They want loans, right?
Yeah.
That you know are not loans.
No. Oh, yeah.
Nobody's ever paying you
back. I get
back.
Out one loan. The only one I've ever get out, and it came back.
Really?
Back. It came back.
Yeah. You got lucky.
Yeah, I did. Actually, it's that guy. It looks like my brother with the mustache. Oh, whoo, steak and potatoes. You know what I'm talking about? My coach.
Oh,
the guy with the mustache. Oh. That last time you were talking about, what's his, when Schwab was here, and what's his other buddy's name? What's his name?
Brian Callen?
Yeah. He's like, who's that? His brother or something? You remember in the cage? And,
oh, right.
Yeah, he actually started his own business and helped him out, and he's the only guy I trust.
Well, that's someone that you're close to, but it's always people that you're kind of like in the periphery that have some stupid business idea that can't go wrong.
Yeah.
It can't go wrong. Those people are my favorite. This can't miss.
Yeah, I don't play that game. Plus, my wife's the one pretty much in charge of the money.
That's good.
So that's good.
You have like removal from it. Like, hey, I can't even do anything. I'm
sorry. Exactly. I blame her, and she's like, she
can't
don't
even
care.
Buy sneakers.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't buy underwear for myself. I wait for my next fight.
So who schedules your training? Like, say, if you're going to do a big camp for, like, this Ngannou fight, like, who schedules what you do all the time?
My coach, Marcus. He always sits me down. He's like, I want this guy here. I want this guy here. I think we should bring this guy in. And just we kind of just figure it all out. And
so does he have all this written out? Like, he'd like a certain amount of rounds. He wants a certain amount of strength and conditioning. Is he your overall trainer?
Yeah, he's my head coach. He's the one that figures everything out. But we have my box coach, Alex. I have my strength and conditioning, Bobby. I have Steve, the guy that looks like the mustache. Yeah, he's a grappling, kind of more of my, like, just my dude, just kind of makes me feel good about myself. Just fun dude. I tear him apart and talk shit to him and make myself feel better about myself. Like, God, you're so old and fat. And, like, I feel good. Marcus, he sets it all up, makes sure it's all good, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, and then, just Saturdays. I usually take Fridays off and Sundays.
How much strength and conditioning do you do?
I don't do too much. I don't do, like, heavy lifting. I don't, because it's not a powerlifting competition. It's a fight.
Right.
So, like, on Tuesdays, I do posterior chain work for my lower back and my half. We have you ever know West Side Barbell?
Sure.
The belt squat?
Yeah, I love that thing.
Oh, dude, it's sick.
They're putting one in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, dude, Louis Simmons is the bomb.
Good dude, isn't he?
I love that guy.
Yeah.
He's a freak. We had one of the best podcasts ever with him. He's so fucking crazy. He's out of his mind.
My coach is like one of, like, the OGs with him. Like, he worked out in his garage before it became, like, it is now. Like, he used to, like, just train with him back in the day.
Yeah, we went there. He gave us a tour, and that whole belt squat thing, that thing's amazing.
Oh, it's awesome. Plus, it gives you traction and not so much strength. So, I do that, they're the new one that's even awesomer now, too, which is great. You can deadlift off of it, and you can do rubber band. Like, they're geniuses over there. Just do an amazing job. So I do a bunch of that, like reverse hypers.
Yeah, I've got a reverse hyper machine back here.
Yeah, the pendulum swing's real good, too.
Thing's amazing. Yeah, that reverse hyper is a back fixer.
Oh, I mean, night and day.
This episode is brought to you by Hostage Tape. First of all, what a great name. This is a product that I use, and I started using long before it was an ad. Your sleep game is about to get a whole lot better, kids, because I want to introduce you to Hostage Tape. Put simply, it is tape for your mouth. But you're probably wondering why you should even need that. Well, if you're a mouth breather, if you snore a lot, or if you suffer from sleep apnea, this could make a big difference. This mouth tape can reduce or eliminate snoring and apnea, and at the same time, it'll help filter the air going to your lungs, increase your oxygen uptake, and improve circulation, which will make you feel more energized. It has tons of other benefits, too, like it helps with bad breath, dry mouth, and, of course, better sleep. For you and your partner, don't let bad sleep hold you hostage. Shut your fucking mouth with Hostage Tape. Buy it today and get a special buy two, get one free offer. That's a 90-day supply. Just visit HostageTape.com/Rogan. That's HostageTape.com/Rogan. It's the craziest thing ever. I mean, if you have a back issue, ladies and gentlemen, please just Google reverse hyper. It is an amazing machine that Louis Simmons created, and it literally decompresses your spine and strengthens it at the same time. It is a work of art.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I mean, I can't talk to him. I'm excited.
Yeah, there it is right here. Look at me with my fucking paperboy hat with that belt squat thing on. That thing's amazing, man.
Yeah.
But I feel like having that thing on you, you would seriously develop some like real power in your movements and your ability to push off. And I think for striking, that would be fucking incredible, that thing.
Yeah, I did what I do yesterday. I did 3 5-minute rounds, 290.
So do you shadow box while you're doing that?
Yeah, it depends what I do. I do a little shadow box. The first one I did marching, then I slide back and forth just a little bit. Then I do a – it's kind of funny, but I actually grab the bar and I like, thrust my hips. It actually helps me. Like, works my hips and it helps me with my lower back. And then the next round we did I would squat, medicine ball, throw it to one coach, squat, throw it back, back and forth 5 minutes. And then another one I did like rubber bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep me, you know, just kind of keep moving a little bit like that, and then.
You evolved this over time?
Oh yeah, we actually have put it back up again. We used to have a medicine ball that was strapped up and like a Muay Thai clinch.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, you know, for 5 minutes. That was terrible actually. So that was actually not fun at all. We did that, and then we had like these massive like. I don't know what they were. They almost look like a like part of a boat, but there's these big metal rings like. Oval rings, and they had chains on them, and we just sit there and just walk like this and keep your hands up high and just...
So just working on keep your hands up. With,
plus we put the Vertimax in there. You ever Vertimax?
No, what's a Vertimax?
So it's like a platform. The platform has got all, you know, straps and all resistance. It's pretty cool. So you can jump, and, you know, punch and...
Oh, you know, I think I have seen that before. It's like it's strapped up to different parts of your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So you could throw knees and punches and kicks and stuff like that.
Yes, yeah,
so
we add that to that, so it's pretty interesting.
And you do operate on rounds? You do like rounds when you're doing that?
5 minute rounds, yeah. So like when we go back and forth of that and stuff like that, you can want to be one heavy, one resistance and da da da.
So do they monitor your heart rate? No?
No, I just push it to the limit. I don't worry about it. You know, like, I do listen to my body if I'm tired or I'm struggling, you know. Like, the last camp for JDS camp, I don't know what I was thinking, but I did, like, I was already doing 5 5-minute rounds within, like, the first, like, 10 or 12 weeks before the fight. And I was, like, fine. I was, like, oh, yeah, I feel good. Yeah, it's amazing. And then, like, 8 weeks in, I was, like, ooh, I just died.
You went too hard.
Yeah, I just was being just a dumb jock.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. It's like what is the, not that you're a dumb jock, but like that is, what is the, what's the way you prepare for like a major championship fight? Like, what is the build up like? Like, how do you know like when to push too hard? How do you know when you're peaking, when to back off?
Well, every fight, 2 weeks out, I stop sparring. I don't spar 2 weeks before a fight.
2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Why is that?
To let my body rest. No more, no building my body, you know, hurt my body. So that's one reason I made that JDS fight. Because literally everything hurt so bad. I would wake up in the morning, but like just stretching out, I could feel the pain, like just my bones. Not like
from
just,
sparring,
just soreness. Yeah, I was just being sore, and then from sparring, from doing everything, grappling, just, you know, on and on, boxing, whatever. And then you know, if I had 2 weeks, man, I felt like $1 million.
So what do you do for those 2 weeks out?
I do pad work, conditioning, running, and stuff like that. You know, just keep my mind straight, my mind right. You know, working the pads, just like technique, going over the game plan for the week. You know,
everybody's got a different strategy for that. Like Matt Hughes told me, he would work out hard right up until the day of the fight. Like, yes, he's like, that's what we've always done. It's what I've always done. It feels right for me. Like, and puts his mind in a good place, I guess, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's old school, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
old, old school.
Though,
yeah.
But he worked for him. I mean, look at him. He's one of the best of all time. You know?
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean.
But I talked to another coach who said that when he was competing, that what he would do is the last week of the fight, he literally wouldn't do anything. He goes, I wouldn't work out at all. I go, nothing? He goes, nothing. He goes, I might ride my bike. He goes, I might swim a little bit because I don't do shit. He goes, I already know how to fight. He goes, I'm already in shape. He goes, I'm just trying to recover.
Yeah.
And he goes, and you think about it, like if you haven't worked out in a week, when you go and work out, you're like fucking.
Yeah, it's like that.
You feel so powerful and energetic because everything's recovered. Yeah. And he's like, that's how I want to be when I'm fighting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
I think that's how I, you know, I still go hard. You know, I still do my rounds and I, you know, I'm pushing the limit. But like, you know, I definitely just the last 2 weeks just let my body rest from getting beat up.
Yeah,
you
know, no, it makes sense.
Get my mind right too, you know.
Do you you have any sort of recovery methods? Do you do like cryotherapy or massage or ice baths or?
Yeah, I do ice baths on my own, but I do cryo now. I have a place that hooks me up, so I go there back in Cleveland. I do Epsom salt probably once a week with a menthol. Is that what it's called? Menthol with that green menthol.
Is it menthol? Aren't those cigarettes?
No, it's like, I think it's like whatever, you know, it comes in like the. They can either put it like in the Epsom salt and like green, like the liquid.
I don't even know what that is.
I have no
idea. So it's Epsom salt, but it's green?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's menthol. I have no idea. I should kind of pay attention to that. You know, who knows? But it's supposed to, yeah, opens up the pores. It actually helps with people cutting weight too, but it actually opens up, you know, gets everything out. And then I do that like once or twice a week. I do the cryo probably once. I'm going to start doing that here soon, once, twice a week. You know, proteins, amino acids, all the stuff, you know, you're supposed to. I go to a chiropractor a couple times a week. They also it's included massages, so I get a 20-minute massage after. So.
Yeah, I think massage is super beneficial. I think the more people do that, the better. I think especially for fighters, you're constantly dealing with knots and things that could eventually become like real injuries.
Yeah, I remember when I was supposed to fight Ben Rothwell and I pulled out a fight. It was like the worst time of my life. I never pulled out a fight before. I didn't know what to do. I literally couldn't bend over. Like I was like, I'll never forget. I dropped my wallet. I was like,
what happened?
Just my back. It was so screwed up. Like I was driving. I couldn't even, like sit up straight. I had to like it was so bad. My back was so messed up. Like I would.
Did you get an MRI?
Yeah. So my lower. Sorry. My what was it? My L4, whatever L3.
Lumbar.
Yeah,
right.
Lumbar. They were just screwed up. They're herniated, bulging out, whatever you want to call them. And so I went to talk to Tom from Westside. You know, Irish guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, good English guy. Whatever. He was like, hey man, check out his psoas. The psoas muscle.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know what the psoas muscle is?
No.
So it's a muscle that's connected on the inside of your thigh, like inside your bone, and it goes over your hip bone and it goes to your lower back.
Okay.
So I was sitting there and like I was like, take your shit, and I'm like, oh, like I could feel like my spine, it would kill. So I started like stretching it out and I started getting a massage, and the massage girl was like, she's like, I'm not going to lie. She's like, you touching your psoas muscle, because you have to dig and get to it because like, you just can't find it.
Right.
She's like, it was like a rubber band with like bumps on it. She's like, it was disgusting. She's like, it was a dad. So I go to West Island, this guy named John Quint, who is a release therapist, whatever. Big dude, awesome dude. He actually saved my career. He started working my psoas and started stretching me out. Well, I mean, now I can do head kicks now. I never be able to do a head kick.
So it was like a muscle that just was broken down and it wasn't getting enough recovery.
I think it was from wrestling, from being, you know,
sure,
and then just being tight all the time, and then hurting my back when I was a little kid. You know, not a little kid, when I was 18, I hurt my back, and then he just carried on. And
found you ever do yoga?
I did. Yeah, it's tough for me. I'm not gonna lie.
Of course it is.
Yeah,
that's why it's supposed to be good for you. Yeah, it's hard to do.
I probably should do it. It's just it's tough. I remember when I was training at a gym before I started doing mixed martial arts. I was doing a yoga class and I was trying to like do it. And this lady's like, "You're just too big." She literally told me that. I was like, "You're a terrible instructor. Like, how do you want me to come back? Like, what?
You're just too big."
She's like, "You're just too big. Your muscles are too big." That's what she told me.
The yoga instructor told you
that? Yeah.
She's ridiculous.
I was so devastated. I just walked out. I didn't know what to do. I was like, this is stupid.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I probably lost my mojo after that.
No. You got to get back in there. I would just think that like for anyone that's involved in anything that's as brutal as MMA, that yoga is a great sort of balancing thing for that. Keeps you flexible. You know, keeps your core strong. Does a lot of you've developed like weird strength. Strength in like it helps the joints. It helps like a lot of the connecting tissues. Helps stabilize everything.
Yeah, I believe it. Plus, it's really good with your mind and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah, that's why. I've done it like once or twice. Like I told you, and the lady's like, your muscles. I mean, like when I read about it, when I've seen about it, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, like that post on Instagram that I put up last night.
Yeah, I saw that.
From, pull this up. Like, this is from Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood. This, got it? What's up? Yoga is a martial art you do against yourself. How do you say Nick's last name? Gregoriadis. Nick Gregoriadis. Anyway, real good jiu-jitsu guy. He was the guy that was in London Real, right? Wasn't he? Use that little fancy Google machine. I'm pretty sure that's Nick. He was in the early London Real. He did our podcast. Yeah, he did the podcast a long time ago. But that's a great quote, that yoga is a martial art you do against yourself.
How long have you been doing it for?
Real serious for like 2 years, 2.5 years. Before that, I would do it like once a month or once every now and then, but now I do it pretty regularly. We did the Sober October thing. No booze, no pot, 15 hot yoga classes a month. It's fucking life-changing, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, I haven't done yoga since. changed my life. Right. I really haven't, but I need to because I tweaked my my back yesterday doing something.
Do you a chiropractor?
No. No. Yeah, I don't believe in them.
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm sure you do.
Oh, so good.
I think massage is good, but do you know how chiropractic was founded? Do you know where it came from? Mm-hmm. It came from a scam artist. The guy was a magnetic healer, and it came to him in a seance that he could cure all ailments if you manipulate people's spines. Yeah, and then he was killed by his own son, who was also a scam artist. His own son ran over him with a fucking car and then took over the business.
I'm sold. Yeah. I'm in. Yes.
There's, you know, people claim all sorts of benefits for all sorts of things, but there's no scientific evidence that manipulating your spine does anything. The only thing that it does show is that if you can manipulate lower backs, sometimes with some people you can relieve some of the pain. But I think a lot of that is just massaging them. Like a lot of that is just manipulating them, just rubbing into them, giving them some sort of relief and adjusting them. But the neck is very dangerous. You know, like people that want to get their neck adjusted and feel that pop. It feels good, right? But literally people have gotten strokes from that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I read a little study on it. It said, like, you know, they did, like, you know, adjusting, you know, twice a week. And kids, like, reaction, like, since sports were quicker just because of everything was, like, lined up perfectly.
Yeah, I don't think that's real.
I feel like it is, though.
I'm sure you do.
I'm just sure.
I just don't think I don't think your body is manipulated that way. I think that what's happening is you're putting attention on your body. You're thinking about recovery more. You're getting adjusted. And while you're getting adjusted, you're getting massaged.
Yeah.
Like when I used to get adjusted, the best part of it was what you said, the massage.
Yeah.
That was the best part. I'd get massaged, and then I'd get adjusted, and it felt good. Like everything loosened up. But when I talk to guys that are actual orthopedic surgeons and real doctors, like spinal doctors, and they talk about it, they're like, you're just making like a pop. Like it's not real. Like it doesn't – your body would be so fucked up if like you could manipulate it one way or another. That's how you fix things. It's like that's not how you fix things. Like if you got an injury, it's like there's a whole bunch of shit going on. Like if you have some sort of a muscle pull or a back injury – I soured on it when I had a bulging disc. And the reason why was because this guy was convinced that I didn't have a bulging disc and I didn't get an MRI. And I was just going to a chiropractor and he was like pushing down on my head. I had in my cervical, in my neck.
Oh.
It was my hands were going numb from jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And this guy was like trying to tell me, just keep coming to the car. You'll get adjusted. It'll be fine. And then I finally went to a real doctor and they gave me an MRI. And they're like, no, this is why you're in pain. Your disc is bulging out and it's pressing against your nerve and it's called the ulnar nerve and that's why your hand is going numb.
Yeah.
Like we're going to give you spinal decompression and you should try to look into some things that are going to reduce inflammation. They changed my diet and I started getting something called Regenikine, which is like platelet-rich plasma where they take your blood, they spin it, they heat it up. And in the heating up the blood, it produces this radical anti-inflammatory process. And they then inject that, your own blood, back into the injuries and just fixed it. Over like a period of like 2 or 3 months, then I got another MRI and it went away. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that shit is just fucking voodoo. Just nonsense. And you think it's working or you're thinking about it or you're giving yourself time to rest while you're getting all those adjustments so you think that the adjustments are what's doing it. But obviously there's a lot of people that are chiropractors that are very skillful in all sorts of different methods of recovery, like electrical muscular stimulation, massage. There's a bunch of different things.
Even traction.
I don't know enough about acupuncture.
Yeah, me neither. That's what I was wondering. I never got it done, but I always like, yeah.
It seems to me like horseshit. If I had a guess. It's just, but I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some method to it. I mean, I think that massage works. That definitely works. Like, if I get a good massage and I have like something that's tight and, you know, like your neck is fucked up from not tapping or something like that, and then you go get it massaged out, like, you can fix that. Like, that actually can provide you some relief. And I'm sure that if you go to one of those people that does cupping, like people apparently swear by that shit. You know cupping?
What is cupping, by the way? I've seen it like, like sucks on the bag and these, like, these terrible marks on your body. But
I think that's half of it. Half of it is like the marks in your body make you think like you're getting something done. But they take this cup and it sucks all your skin up into the cup. And how does that? I don't know how it works. Like, look at this asshole.
That's so
that guy
weird.
Looks like he has the worst disease known to man.
Yeah,
like imagine if that was just like what happened to your skin. You got like some porcupine disease.
Or is it nipple disease? Look at a bunch of nipples.
I guess like they have a vacuum thing and it attaches to the top and it pulls.
Look at that. Yeah. How is that like?
Yeah. Olympic cupping, a practice rooted in ancient Islam. Oh, shit. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, look, these fucking people are world class athletes at the top of their game. Is cupping therapy? Okay. How about Google? Does cupping work? Is cupping therapy work? It's probably some weird sexual shit called cupping, too. You got to be real careful. Careful what you pull up. How does cupping work?
It's dry cupping.
Yeah. How does it work? The glass cup is warmed by burning an alcohol-soaked cotton ball inside of it. And they're making a bomb. This removes the oxygen in the cup, which creates a vacuum. The cup is turned upside down and placed on the patient's back. The vacuum created by the lack of oxygen. Well, that's this kind of cupping, but the other one seemed to have like a stem on the top of it where a vacuum thing pulls in. But what is it supposed to do? Facts.
Down here it says.
How do you feel about ice, though?
I think that's very important.
You think my skin?
Yeah. Drawing up the skin. Go scroll over towards the right so I can see the. Yeah. Drawing up the skin in the cup is believed to open the skin's pores, which helps to stimulate the blood flow, balances and realigns the flow of. Okay, you fucked me with this chi. QI. Realigns the flow of QI. Oh, you got any peer reviewed studies on that QI, you fucking dipshit? Breaking up obstructions creates an avenue for toxins to be drawn out of the body. Again, as soon as assholes start talking about toxins, oh, well, I'm just cleansing. I'm on a deep cleanse, getting the toxins out of my body.
So nice. It's so nice.
It's just bullshit talk. That whole toxins talk is I'm pulling toxins out of my body. The fuck you are. No, you know what pulls toxins out of your body? Your liver, you dumb cunt. That's what your liver's for. Yeah. It gets the toxins out. You're not pulling them out with a cup.
For me, it's a sauna after I've been drinking all day.
That helps too. Sweat. Yeah, your sweat does. Well, it'll at least filter out some of that water.
That the ionic foot spa thing.
That's the worst. Where your foot, the water turns black and they try to pretend that it's like toxins coming out of you. Yeah. But meanwhile, it's just a reaction. It's a chemical reaction. Yeah, you ever seen that?
No.
Yeah, they have this thing, it's plugged in, and your foot sits in it, and there's some sort of reaction with the water in your feet, and it turns black, and they try to tell you, oh, the toxins are coming out of your body, and then you walk out of there, I feel amazing, now I need a colonic. No, this is not real, ladies and gentlemen. What is that? Like, what are they doing? What is the exact reaction?
There's lots of videos you can look up where people do the exact process without putting anything in there.
Yeah.
And the water still turns black. I think it's something to do with, like, battery acid or, I don't know. Honestly, that might not be it, but it's something weird.
It's bullshit. People want to get healed. You get hurt. You want to get healed.
So
you want to believe
scheme.
Anything. Yeah. Well, you ever heard of Reiki healers?
Oh, yeah, smacking.
No, that's Rolfing. That's real. That's legit.
Like
that's
from
like
Russia, right?
Fascia manipulation. Yeah. Reiki is like they rub their hands and they just pass them over your body and they heal you. We had this one video that we were watching. This one lady was just rubbing her hand above this lady's vagina, just like above it. Like, what is going on there? What kind of sorcery are you using? What are you trying to exercise from this lady's body?
Next thing you know, started a porno.
Yeah, next thing you know, she's the number one porno star in America. Look, bro. I did it with my hands, my healing, my Reiki healing. I met a dude last night that was a psychic healer. Told me he was a psychic healer. I go, good luck with that. That's not real. You fuck. Psychic healer.
The reason I asked about icing, because like, I know there's some people that don't like icing. They like doing that like that. The injury gets hurt, unless it's needed. But, like, you know, say you sprain your ankle and you kind of start moving it right away and get the blood flow back in there without.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's some evidence that, I think it depends entirely upon the injury. But if you look at the vast majority of scientists and sports medicine therapists and the people that are at the cutting edge of the business, they almost all use ice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't think that you're not supposed to use ice. Within what was it? Who was it on the podcast? Was it Andy Galpin? Who was it that was talking about the time frame between icing and exercise where you need to? Well, it might have been Rhonda Patrick. There's a beneficial amount of time you should wait before you ice after an exercise, like that. You give yourself a chance for more recovery and more growth if you wait a while before icing. Like, say if you had a hard training session You wouldn't want to go right to cryotherapy. You might want to wait an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then go. And then you'll get the benefits of the hard training, but then you also get the anti-inflammatory benefits of cryo.
Yeah, when I did cryo, the first time, a couple times I did it, I was like, this sucks. Like, I wasted a bunch of money. Like, I just hated it.
Right.
And then this other place, plus also it's free, which is nice.
That helps. Free is nice.
Yeah, right. And the guy's like, hey, man, you know, come out. So I checked it out. And, like, man, I got done with that one. It was like, I felt like coldness coming, like, in my whole body. Like,
so it was a better place? You went to a better place? Yeah.
I think so. I think it was, because I definitely felt a difference. You know,
how long are you in town for?
I'm leaving tomorrow.
Damn, I want to take you to the place out here.
Yeah,
the cryotherapy, cryo healthcare out here, they have a very unique system. Their system is, it's, first of all, the guys that developed it, what they did was, instead of having it where you're breathing in liquid nitrogen, you know, like where it's from the neck down, which is a lot of those places, you go into it and you're breathing air and you have to have your head above where the cryo is, because you can't breathe that shit in, which is how that girl in Vegas died, folks. If you don't know, there's a girl in Vegas that went in the tank by herself, and she was too short, and she was breathing in the nitrogen, and she passed out, and then she froze to death. But the ones at Cryo Healthcare, that's the normal one. That's like Floyd Mayweather in there right there, where you see the cryo stuff is all below his head. The ones at Cryo Healthcare, they jack the temperature way down, like 240 degrees below zero. And what they do is they freeze the air itself. So the air they're pumping into is super cold air. So you go in there with full, like, you're breathing in this cold air. It's on your head. Your full body is immersed in this cold air. So it's way more intense. And it's supposed to have way more benefit, because your head gets cold too. So the reaction that your body has for producing cytokines and anti-inflammatory cold shock proteins, your body freaks out way more when everything is covered, not just from the neck down, but your head too.
Really?
Yeah. So too, I wish you were in town. I'll take you there.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Well, you got after this. You got some other duties?
Yeah, I do.
What do you have to do? Other UFC stuff?
No, not even you. Yeah, kind of not. It's like my stuff. I don't know. I didn't want to go, but I had to go.
You're like a big kid.
Oh, it sucks. My wife's like, just go. And I put up a little fight.
That's funny.
I'm ready to be home right now and just training and go.
Like, when you have a big fight, how much of the big fight is, like, how much of the pain in the ass is doing press?
I
don't want to say you're complaining about it, but I mean, as far as, like, time constraints.
Yeah, sometimes it sucks. Like, it does suck, because, like, when you're sitting there, you're thinking about doing this, and they'll call you, like, hey, you're like, oh.
Right.
No. You know, but I understand it's part of the game, and it helps, you know, promote you and, you know, your sales and, you know, pay-per-views and all that stuff.
It does, but there's, like, a balance to be achieved, right? That was Conor McGregor's argument. Conor McGregor's argument was when he went on that world tour with Aldo. He's like, they just did way too much. He's like, by the time you're doing all this, you don't have time to train. He goes, there's no way you're going to train, recover, sleep correctly. You're flying from one city to another country to another country, and you're just constantly on a jet.
Yeah, that was like, when we went to Australia, I mean, I flew to Australia when I found Mark Hunt. And I flew more than I actually was there in Australia. Wow. I was there for like a day and a half, and I flew back home.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was bad.
So the flight is more time.
Like, I think it was like a 20-hour flight there and 20-hour back.
That flight sucks. Well, are they combined too?
Yeah.
Of dicks.
Yeah.
That flight is, you get out of there and you're just half a person. You're like confused, and like something happens to you when you're flying 16, 17 hours in a plane.
I was there for after the fight. So I got there a week early before the fight. I stayed for the week of the fight, and I was there like 3 or 4 more days later. So I was there two and a half, three weeks. And I got home, and it was crazy. So I get home at like 7 in the morning, and my brother's in my house, and me and my wife come home, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to keep my eyes open, and like, it was like so miscombobulated. So I get in the car, I almost forgot how to drive because I was on the other side of the, you know, I mean, like, I'm with my brother, I'm like, you should probably drive. He's like, well, because I've not been on the side of the road in a long time.
Were you driving in Australia?
No, but it was just
OC. Being there?
Yeah, I was just sitting on the opposite side. It was just so weird, you know, just everything was so awkward. I mean, it was crazy. I went for a run, and there's freaking parrots and like,
kangaroos and shit.
Yeah, like they're like just regular, like it's like our seagulls and crows. They're like, ah, you know, I'm like running. They're like, there's like rainbows, like Toucan Sam next to me.
Yeah, Australia is a weird place, man.
Yeah, it was crazy, but like my time clock was screwed up. I went to work a couple days later, and like I was still like 4 days later, and I was still like messed up. It was bad.
Yeah, it could fuck you up for a week or two, but you know, it's worth it just to go to Australia. Just to see.
Amazing.
It's a great place.
Yeah, I have a bunch of family there.
When you have a big fight with a guy like, say, Mark Hunt, where you know it could be a brawl, and that turned out to be a 5-round fight, right? Was it?
Four and a half.
Yeah, you stopped him in the fifth?
Yep.
When you have a fight like that, and you know this is, you're in there for the long haul, do you plan on, like, staying for days after the fight to recover?
No. I actually wanted to get home, but I was a bad boy, so they wanted me to do a couple, like,
promotional things.
Yeah, yeah, so I was like, yeah, well, now I'm here. And plus, I get to see my family. So I have family in Australia. I live in Melbourne and Sydney.
Oh, you have family out there? Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so we had to hang out with them for a little bit. It was cool.
Did you see that video that they posted yesterday of these guys in Australia with a 39-foot boat and a shark swam by it that was 20 feet long? Did you see that video? It's a fucking insane video because the shark is almost as big as the goddamn boat. They have this 39-foot boat, and they have an overhead, like a drone footage of the shark swimming around the boat. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. What do you
do? I definitely shit my pants in that moment.
There's not much you can do. Yeah. I mean, you don't have a whole lot of options.
Wow, that's like
20-foot shark.
That's crazy.
Fuck all that. And Australia has a ton of those. They're all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about.
This happens a lot, apparently. Really? I found a, like, 18-foot shark next to a 21-foot boat.
Fuck that. Dude. Oh, my God.
You ever see those videos, like, those whales and stuff that, like, sprout up? And
yeah.
Like, whoa, you know, like, right next to the boat.
Yeah.
Like,
what is this one, Jamie? It's
the 18-foot shark next to the 21-foot boat.
Oh, my God. That thing is big.
See how big the boat is.
Jesus Christ.
Like, it's huge.
And it's just swimming next to the boat going, can I eat you? How do I eat you? Not sure if I can eat you. God damn. Kid, get back. Get back. That was your son. Get back, you little fuck. Sit down. Jesus Christ. It's a shark. Yeah. They're
that thing, dude.
Did you see the video of the guy who was diving? The real recent video?
Yeah, back, and they like hit the back
and
of his head.
The shark came over and thumped the back of his head.
You see that one guy who was fishing and he was like, I don't know, it was probably, I think an older video, but he's like this, you know, old guys like this in the seat. And also he's like this and the swordfish.
Half of it, yeah.
No, the whole thing jumped in.
Oh, whoa.
And it was just started going crazy. And then one guy like jumped overboard because he didn't want to get like sautéed by this thing, you know. And the guy's doing this, so the guy trying to like get out of the chair, trying to hurry up, you know. Like,
it was the fish was trying to get away from a shark. Is that
no,
why
I think
he just flew in.
Just jumped in.
Oh
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I saw like that seal one time was like he jumped in the boat, was trying to get away from like a killer whale.
Yeah, dude. My oldest daughter, when she was 13, we went fishing. And she was a vegetarian at the time. She loves animals. And I was like, you know, but she was eating fish. I said, listen, let's just go fishing. We'll catch a fish. We'll cook it. And you'll get, like, this sort of connection with your food. Is this one?
This is in South Beach the other day.
Some guy just hanging around with a
shark. 10 feet off the coast.
This guy's just trying to die. What is he doing?
I don't know if he even saw it.
So anyway, I'm on this boat. And we catch a marlin. Within 10 minutes of the trip, 10 minutes in, we catch a marlin, which is crazy, right? All of a sudden, I'm pulling this thing in, and it's not a big marlin. It's probably like 80 pounds or something like that. We get it into the boat, and they beat the fucking thing to death with clubs right in front of her because that's what they do. They pull it in and then just fucking thump, 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 and she's sitting there, and then they put it on ice. After that, and then when they put it on ice, it's like still alive. Every now and then, you'd hear like its tail would be flapping out, it'd be spazzing, it would come back to life, and they'd thump it in the head again. She was a vegetarian for another year after that.
Oh,
took a while,
man. It
took a while to turn her back around. My thought was like, we're gonna go catch some mahi mahi, this is gonna be great.
Yeah,
like, it's hard to catch a marlin, you usually don't catch a marlin.
Yeah,
and we caught one within 10 minutes. Yeah, it was,
I mean. And you're like, you're trying to be like good dad. You're like, I'm going to take a fish.
Like,
and then they're just
smash
the smile right in front of her.
It just was the total wrong experience. Like my youngest daughters, I took them fishing and they caught little fish and it was a great experience. It was like what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Like they caught little fish. We brought them back to the restaurant. The restaurant cooked them. You were staying at a resort and that was great. I was like, whew. Nobody got clubbed. I was terrified the first time I took him. I'm like, if you're fucking four and you watch a marlin get clubbed to death,
yeah.
You might not ever bounce back from that.
I don't know what I would do if I was a child and saw that. I'd probably be scarred for life.
Yeah.
I mean,
I fucked up. It's the only time I've ever caught a marlin, too. I've gone ocean fishing 100 times. Yeah. I never caught a marlin.
Yeah, I've never been ocean fishing.
Oh, it's the best.
Is it fun?
Yeah, man, it's amazing. Yeah, the only thing that's kind of a bummer is a lot of times they just want to troll, right? So they're just pulling the lines behind the boat, so you're not really actively doing anything. I like casting.
Yeah.
You know, like the best ocean fishing I've done is in Mexico for, I think they're either skipjack or amberjack tuna, I forget what they're called, but we would go and there would be, they would follow these seagulls and bait fish. So like the bait fish would be frothing on the water because the tuna were underneath jacking them, and then just cast into them and just, oh, it was amazing.
Where in Mexico?
It was outside of Cabo.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, it was outside Puerto Vallarta. Yeah, it was outside Puerto Vallarta, so I'm not sure like what part of the ocean it was. But it's great. You know, it's like when you eat a fish that you caught like an hour ago, you realize like, wow, this tastes way better.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like the grading of the – it's the kind of the opposite with meat. Because with meat, like you can eat a lot of meat fresh right after you kill it and it tastes really good. But much of like the best cuts of meat that you get like from a butcher or from a really good steak restaurant, they let it age. You know, and apparently they do that with tuna too. Like when you get sushi, I didn't know that.
No, yeah.
Yeah, they let that shit age.
Yeah, I love sushi.
Do you fish?
I mean, I used to like back in the day.
Yeah.
But
how do you have time, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of busy. I have a little pond in my house, but I don't think
you have a pond?
Yeah, it's not like not huge. Probably like 20 yards by like 20 yards. Not big at all. But we do have like massive turtles, like the one
in the pond.
Yeah, which I had no idea. So like, actually, we made a bet. One of the UFC fights, and a bunch of my coaches were over. And I was lit up having fun, and like, and I never bet. And they're like, "I bet you this person wins." So I was like, "I'll take that bet." Like, what happens if you win? I'm like, if the person that wins, you know, you can do whatever you want, pick whatever, you know. So I win. I'm like, "All right, you guys have to get in my little shuttle boat, and you have to go across the lake. We did snowballs at you." It was winter, middle of winter. And they're like, "No." I'm like, 100%, you're going to do it. So they did it. And the best part was it was covered in ice, so they couldn't go anywhere. And for the pedal, it sucks. So they're just sitting there, and I'm drilling them. Like, so whatever. And we do our thing. And all of a sudden, like months later, my wife's like, "Honey," she sends me a video of these massive snapping turtles. They're like hate fucking each other. Like,
really?
The one's like sitting, I wonder if I can find it on my phone. The one's like this, and I'll get some back. He's like, and all of a sudden the girl's like, like tries like bite his face off. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It was like, but they were like, I mean, they had been that big. They were massive. And then I looked over and they had like a bunch of babies, and they don't. And their necks are so long. Like you have to grab them by the behind.
Yeah,
like, they'll bite your hand off.
Yeah. So those just moved into your neighborhood. Is that what happened? Or no, were they always there?
Where I live, like it's weird. So I have like a private drive from my house. You can't see my house off the driveway. So we have like a little pond, and so. Yeah.
But were they there before?
Yeah, they've always been there. They go back and forth. There's a little pond next to it that's connected where our driveway is.
Cook them up. Turtle soup. Recipe.
Yeah.
Half decent if you cook it right. Yeah. What is your diet like?
You know, usual pizza, beer.
No. I frowned upon that. I mean, I joked around about that, but we had Courtney DeWalter in. She's the woman who won the Moab 240.
Do you know what that is? Yeah.
That chick is a fucking savage.
Yeah.
She beat every man. Every person who entered that race by a marathon length, 240 miles, she was ahead by more than 20 miles. The next person, the second place person, was more than 20 miles behind her when she won.
So it's like an ultra marathon.
Yeah, it's a 3 days for some people,
wow.
But for her, she did it. I think she did it in two. Right? She's an animal. She's a fucking animal. Anyway, beer, nachos. Candy. That's what she eats. Beer, nachos, and candy. And we were like, what? Like, I expected some sophisticated ketogenic diet protocol where they're monitoring her fucking her ketone levels and her blood and checking out all of her portions are mapped
it's
out.
It's like Ivan Drago running around. Yeah. Like, yeah.
When she was here, she just kept eating candy. She was just eating candy, like M&Ms and shit.
I get Icon meals.
Yeah, those are great.
I love them. That's right. Yeah, I work with them.
So you get a meal prep.
Yeah, so they send me a bunch of stuff. It's good. You know, but I'm a heavyweight, so I don't go, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, some days I love pizza. Like,
you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't like.
Have you ever thought about trying to go to 205?
We thought about it, but it'd be really tough.
What do you weigh now?
240.
Yeah, and you're not fat. So will you, like, even if you got super lean, you're probably looking at 225 and then a hard 20 cut.
Yeah, they're at 225 class all day.
Yeah.
The easy mate there. Easy
I
mate.
Think there should be one.
Me too.
I think there should be a lot more weight classes. I really do. And I know there's a resistance because they want to keep the sport pure. They don't want it like boxing with a weight class every 4 pounds. But I feel like if you look at guys, there's a lot of guys that I think are tweeners. You know, they're like, they're not quite. Yeah. Well, you're a heavyweight champ. You can't say you're a tweener.
That's true.
You're like me. But you can't say that because you're the champ.
Yeah.
But there's guys that. You know, like Diego Sanchez was always a good example. He's a little bit too small to make 55. When he tried to make 45, it was a disaster. Like, but if there was a 65-pound weight class, I think that's perfect for him. And there's a lot of guys that, like, 70 to 85, that's a big jump. 85 to 205, that's crazy. That's 20 pounds.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think definitely a few more weight classes, not like
every 2 pounds. I think every 10 pounds.
Yeah, I think it'd be great, too. I think I'd be on board for that.
I think that's the move. Every 10 pounds, and then when you go 205, 205 to 225, 225 to – it should be unlimited.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be 265. Like, that seems silly to me.
Yeah, but I think that too, with those guys that are unlimited, they won't last long.
They might not, but Ngannou's cutting weight to get to 265.
He weighed 250 last fight, I thought.
No, he weighed 260-something. He weighed 263 or 264. Yeah, no, he's cutting weight.
Oh, cool. Good for him.
Yeah, he's a big fella.
Yeah.
But obviously, there's pros and cons to being big, and the con is if you're getting into the third, fourth, and fifth rounds, you know, those big guys are not known for their endurance. They say that the weight class, there was always a thought in MMA, like when Cain Velasquez was on top, there was a thought that might be the perfect size, like 240. Like anything bigger than that, maybe it's just like not worth it because a 240-pound man could basically knock out anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, so the power's still there, but you have more – like nobody had more endurance than Kane.
No, I think so. I think being like 240, you know, you still got the cardio, you still got the strength, still got the speed. I mean, that's, I love being where I'm at. You know, I don't try to gain – I mean, I'm not going to push myself.
You ever thought about gaining or no?
No. I mean, I've gained – I remember after Mark Hunt hype, man, I kind of went on the deep end and just went on binge drinking and flying my wife for like living it up of life. And actually, I stepped on a scale. I was like
– what'd you weigh?
259.
Wow.
I never weighed in my life.
Did you take a picture like holding your gut?
No, I looked exactly the same.
Really?
I just looked a little bit thicker. Nothing like bad.
So it filled out good.
Yeah, it was a good, yeah. I think a lot of them asked, too.
So if you were a chick, it would have been a good move.
Man, I would have been twerking all day. Tony Ram, go back to the whole ultramarathon thing.
Yeah.
So I'm a weirdo, and so I found out about ultramarathon, so I go on Wikipedia, and I start reading all about it.
Yeah.
Like, they were talking about, and then I read, like, the top three guys. Like, they're crazy. Like, the one guy was, like, the first ever ultramarathon guy like that did awesome was a cattle runner, cattle farmer guy. So they run through the night. Well, he didn't sleep at night, so he would just run and keep running.
Jesus.
He didn't run fast, but then they had another guy.
I saw that guy. I saw a video about that guy.
And then there's another guy. He was like 30 years old. He had like epiphany. He was drinking one night and he just got sick of like. He just went drinking one night for his birthday party. Put on his shoes and just started running. Realized he had he could still run, and he like tore it up again. I don't know who the guy's name was. He's like American. And another guy. He was like, at one point he was sleeping, running, and like he's still like.
While he was sleeping, he was running?
Yeah, he was like.
While he was running, he was sleeping. Sorry,
I can't talk. Give me a break. But he's like. they watched him sleep while he was running. Like he was sleeping.
Whoa.
I don't remember. And the guy like, he's like twisting.
Snoring?
No, I'm saying he was just running. Like
right.
He just, I don't know if he was snoring, but like they had another time, like they were saying a story about it. He like twists his ankle in the beginning of the race, and it was like the size of a grapefruit. He still destroyed everyone. Waited at the finish line, high-fived everyone that crossed the finish line.
Wow.
Like, it's going to bother me. I'm going to look it up. He was like, I don't know. It's like, did you find
this
it?
This is the one guy that got Cliff Young Shuffle.
Yeah, that's the that's the cattle rancher guy.
Yeah.
So he kind of has a shuffle, and the idea was that shuffle allowed him to save energy. Because he wasn't like picking up his legs like really high. He's just kind of like shuffling along. Yeah. I remember this guy. Yeah, look at him. He competed without his false teeth because they rattled when he ran. Jesus Christ.
He was 61 when he showed up, and no one thought knew what he was doing. They didn't know if he knew what he signed up for.
Wow. Meanwhile, he won. Well, the history's filled with guys like that. It's like everybody thinks they know exactly how everything works until someone comes along that's a completely unique version. No one has seen before, like that guy. doing his little shuffle.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Or like this Courtney DeWalter chick. She just won. She just beat the world record for the most amount of hours a woman has ever run in 24 hours. She's a freak. And again, candy, drinking beer, nachos.
Like watching those people like run marathons, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
I remember one year I had my one coach, he did like security detail for like the Cleveland Revco Marathon. So I'm like, I sat there. It was the worst day of my life, though. Like, I literally sat by in the van driving 5 miles per hour behind these people running. And so they like fell off. I'd pick them up, take them to the finish line. But like, it was just crazy watching. Like, they were so like nuts. I remember the one guy, we stopped to check on him. He's like, sitting like, and like, you're right. And they got an IV on him and stuff like that. He's like, yeah, I'll be fine. He put an IV in him. He went to go finish the race, right? This guy's like dead almost. Gets IV, comes back to life. He's like, I got this. Goes, I guess, starts running again. And I'll never forget, we're about to be done. And I see the guy running. He's about 100 yards away and he starts like tripping and falling. And he couldn't finish the race.
Wow. 100 yards away?
Yeah, he's like literally 100 yards away. He couldn't finish it. I was like, oh, I felt so bad for that guy. But like, he was like literally about to fall, pass out the first time. They put an IV, he felt great. He's like, I'm good. Leave me alone. Took off again and then.
It's endurance racing is a totally different kind of thing as far as like the mindset. Like if you think about a 5-round heavyweight title fight is a grueling affair, right? It's 25 minutes of throwing bones at the best fighters in the world, but it's still 25 minutes. These motherfuckers, like this Courtney DeWalter chick, she's running for 3 days.
It's crazy.
What is
this?
It was
a Dallas marathon. This was a lady that was winning. She got to the end and she just collapsed. And this girl helped her. She's like a high schooler.
Oh,
she was running
God.
One of the like, shorter races and just saw her and just like was compelled to help her.
Wow.
Finish.
Did she still win the race?
She was. I guess the lady said she was afraid she was going to get disqualified because someone was helping her, but she still won.
I would give that chick some of that money.
So yeah. Someone's helping her. That seems weird.
Sort of helping her. You can kind of tell
she
doesn't really care.
She's picking her up though. She's picking her up every time she falls. I feel like that's cheating.
They might have had some rules. I don't
listen.
Know. Hey.
What about the rules when people poop?
Tell that bitch to give back her medal. No, just kidding.
What about that rule when they poop themselves? They poop himself or something like that.
Is that legal?
I don't know.
They said in fights now, if you poop yourself, they stop the fight.
Oh.
A lot of guys have shit themselves. A lot of guys, famously. Yeah, I mean.
I wrestled a guy in college one time that shit his pants.
I remember Michael Chiesa, who was he fighting? Beneil Dariush. And right before the fight is started, he leans over to the cage. He goes, dude, I might shit myself during the fight. I go, you serious? And he's like, I got to shit so bad.
Are you serious?
And he wound up choking out Dariush.
Oh, thank God.
And we were talking about it afterwards. He goes, something will happen during the fight. It went away, but I was convinced I was going to shit myself.
Really?
He goes, I just got out there and I was like, oh no.
That's the worst feeling. That would be a terrible feeling. That would be like Arlovsky, like, where my hotel room, they're coming to get me. And I'm like, you know what? Let me just shit, make sure. Thank God I shit, because whatever came out of me, like, it was like just disgusting diarrhea. And I'm like sitting there, like, I get done, I'm like,
imagine holding that in.
Oh yeah, I didn't feel like I had to go, but I was like, you know, just checked me on the safe side, you know. Man, thank God I fucking.
That was a big win for you too.
That was a good one. Good start of it all.
Yeah, it was a big one because it was like definitive. It was like you were marching towards the title, and then when you blasted Arlovsky out, it was like, all right, this guy's the guy. Like, this is the next guy.
Well, it took a little longer than that, but.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was like the definitive, like, you're like, I want my fucking shot. Like, where's my fucking shot? Like, right then and there, like, that was sort of one of those moments where, like, you got to give this guy the shot.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate it. And you helped me out with that, too, so I appreciate that.
You know I'm a big fan.
No, I appreciate that.
And then the title fight, man. Holy shit, that must have been amazing. Knocking out Verdum in Brazil like that with one punch. And holy shit. That was, like, one of the best title fight winning performances ever.
Yeah, it was a good night, man. Yeah, I actually work on that a lot. Step over right across the guy chasing you down, just get the angle, and it was just what a great night. You know, I wouldn't be there without my coaches, honestly. They're just great people.
Of course.
They're just like, that's the reason I'm there, just because they put so much time and effort into me. Like, I'll say it all over and over again, but they're just amazing guys, and I'm very lucky to have them in my corner.
Well, they're very lucky to have you too. You know, it takes both. You know, and you're right. You know, you have a great relationship with your coaches, too, which is very important, I think. Like you were saying about having a great wife, having great friends, having a great support system, like all that stuff, like for your mind, for your mindset, it's great. But having coaches that you have a great relationship with, that you really, you know, they're looking out for you. You know, they're working hard for you. You guys are in there together.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I love about my head coach, Marcus. I really looked at him like a long time ago, and I was like, man, when's the way you retire today? He's like, more time to drink wine, bro. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I love about
he's
him.
Fine,
yeah, you know, he's like, I don't care, dude. You can do what you want. I just joke around, see what he would say. You know, he's like, bro, he's like, whatever. He's like, listen, I just want you to be happy. You know, that's
the best kind of coach, man. That's the best kind of coach. That way, when you retire, and the worst is the kind of coach that wants a guy to fight when you really know it's over.
Yeah.
You know, when the guy really should be stepping away. And then you see them, you know, trying to give the guy the pep talk, and you know the best days are in the past.
Yeah, that's why Mark is actually real good at that. You know, we've had a couple guys that were like, I want to know. He's like, yeah, I ain't going to be in your corner. He's like, you should retire. Yeah, I mean,
so hard.
It really killed him inside of telling that, but he's like, listen, you know what?
This is an important point to talk about. You remember that feeling that you felt like after the Struve fight? It's like you've got to kind of figure that out on your own and come back on your own.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And some guys, they have that feeling, and then they're never the same again. They never reach those same. Like, you got better, for sure. You rose above that. But some people are dwarfed by bad performances or a bad knockout or whatever it is, and they're never the same again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's two different type of people. Either they're going to go above beyond it or you're not. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah, but there's also stages in your life too, right, where you just don't want to do it anymore. Like, you see some guys who are at one point in time great driven fighters, and then the grind just gets to them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, I totally understand it. Like, I mean, I was just talking to about this Vellante. Yeah, I've seen the last. I mean, I've had 11 UFC fights. I think more than 11 of those have been five rounders. I've trained for five rounders.
That's insane.
Yeah. My fourth UFC fight was a five rounder.
Yeah. And even if they didn't go five rounds, you're still training for five. Yeah, you're doing a camp for five rounds.
I mean, a lot of them ever since then.
The Verdun fight was so crazy because I almost think you benefited from it being in Brazil. Because it seemed like Verdum was so emotional and so ramped up because it was in Brazil. He's like chasing after you, which I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I think a little bit too is that, you know, we knew exactly what he was going to do. And so he did everything he wanted to do, and I just wasn't falling for anything he wanted. You know,
right.
He went for a flying knee, he went for a takedown, he went for a body kick. I just wasn't giving him anything he wanted, you know, and I think he realized that I wasn't going anywhere.
You also caught him before that big punch, too.
Yeah.
When we watched the fight, we did a fight companion. We watched the fight. You clipped him early, and I was like, he's hurt. Like, you could tell there was something going on, like, when he got hit. Like, and then he tried to get it back. And, you know, when a guy gets hit and then just tries extra hard to get it back, like, a lot of times they're exposed, and you just caught that right hand perfect.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be here right now.
What was that feeling like, man?
Awesome. Like, so when I hit him, then he fell, and I was like, holy shit, he fell. You know what I mean? Because, like, when was the last time he's been knocked out like that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he was out. Like,
Junior was the last time. Yeah, and I was like, really,
boom,
really on.
You know, and I was like, he's on a tear. And I'm like, holy shit. So I gave him a couple extra ones.
Right.
And then, you know, I stopped the fight. And I was like, I looked over, and so my coach was like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So I run over, and I was like, you know, like, no one heard us before that, but before I said I'm a world champ, I looked at my coach, and I'm like, we did it. We did it. You know, that's what I told him. I was like, we all did it. You know, then I said I'm a world champ, and I kind of went like Frank the Tank, and I blacked out and didn't remember what I said after that. But, you know, it was awkward too because it was so quiet in there. And all I heard was myself screaming.
It was amazing.
Wife, you know.
It was amazing. We were clapping. When you hopped over the octagon and you're standing there, you're like, I'm a world champ. I'm the world champ. You're like, it was like setting in. Like, you could see it. Those moments, man, those are some of my all time favorite moments when a guy realizes, like, the biggest dream, the biggest accomplishment of his career thus far, at least, and to see a guy like you win the title, it's just, there's nothing like that, man. It's nothing like that.
Yeah, it was just great. You know, it was 45,000. We had about 15 people there. So
45,000 people rooting for Fabricio Verdum. Yeah,
actually, it was 44,985. I had 15 there for me. So we're good.
And then boom.
Yeah, it was my brothers and my cousins, and they're all at the top row with my buddies. And when I knocked him out, they all were going, yeah, they're going crazy. And next thing they're like, oh.
Yeah.
And they're all like, all the Brazilians are like, I'm like, what's up, bro? You know, like, what's up? And they're like, we're sorry. They're like, it's okay. You know, congratulations. They were really nice about it. You know,
cool. Well, yeah. It must have been silent in there, though, when you dropped him.
Oh, it was so awkward. Like, it was so awkward. Like, it was just, because I remember hearing myself screaming, like, I'm like, yay, my God, I'm a champ. You know, like.
What was the crowd doing?
Nothing. They were just quiet. I mean,
wow.
It was just quiet. It was really, like, I remember hearing my wife screaming. I heard her screaming, and that was about it.
Wow.
Yeah. It was awkward. You know? And then, you know, Cleveland was like a totally 180. You know, that was crazy, too.
I'm sure.
You know, getting put in my ass and then getting up and went into zombie mode and didn't care after that.
Wow. It's a crazy time for you, you know?
Yeah.
You're the UFC heavyweight champion of the world. I mean, one day you're going to look back. You're going to be talking to your grandkids. You're talking about the time, like now, and you're the fucking champ of the world.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I just had some, you know, that, you know, might be proud of, my wife, my mom. You know, they're just like, hey, you know, my son actually did something with his life, you know?
Well, what I'm excited about, too, for this Ngannou fight is there's going to be a lot of people buying this on pay-per-view. This is going to be a big fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these big fights, this is what makes, you know, a champion popular. I mean, historically, in boxing, they've always said that the health of the heavyweight division just represents, like, boxing overall. I don't think that's the case anymore. Because now in boxing, you've got all these lightweight guys like Gennady Golovkin, Canelo Alvarez, Lomachenko, all these big stars now that are emerging in the lighter weight divisions just because they're so skillful and talented. Andre Ward. But I think in the heavyweight division of the UFC, it's been a while since people were, like, really pumped up about a big heavyweight title fight.
Yeah. You know, I'm excited, man. Listen, he's a good, tough dude, you know. I mean, you can bring the pain, so what? But unfortunately, I'm not walking out without that belt. I'm still a champ, and still.
When you see a guy like that, what preparations, like, what do you think is different about him than guys you fought before, and what are you going to do different?
Well, I mean, every guy's different. I mean, every fight's different. You know, like, yeah, everyone's like, oh, my God, his punching power. I mean, listen, there's a lot of guys that hit hard. I mean,
yeah.
There's no question. He does hit hard. I mean, but I'm not going to be stupid, put myself in a position where I'm going to get hit. You know, I'm going to do things that make him feel uncomfortable, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm not going to sit there and let him do what he wants. I'm going to dictate what I want.
When you see the rest of the heavyweight division, do you see any standouts or any guys that are coming up that are exciting to you?
Honestly, I don't pay attention.
You don't pay attention?
Not really.
That's a fascinating thing. Because some people do, you know, like, I talked to Matt Hughes after Matt Hughes got beat by BJ Penn, and this is what he said. It was really fascinating because he's got so much courage, that guy. Like, to say this in an interview as well, he's like, honestly, it's a relief. And he's like, being the champ was, like, so much pressure. It was just, it's overwhelming. So having this happen, honestly, right now, I feel relieved. And I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he gave up. I mean, he fought his heart out, but he got caught and got choked out. And then to go from that to say, you know, honestly, he's relieved. And then rebounds and then gets back on the horse and, you know, probably had to have that experience just to have the perspective that, you, or I don't know if you ever had the perspective that you have, but your perspective is different in that you, like, you don't seem to be concerned.
Well, I mean, I'm concerned. There's no question. I think every fight, you know, I'm nervous and always, you know, never know what's going to happen. That's what, you know, as real as it gets, because you never know what's going to happen.
But you're not concerned at all these guys nipping at your heels, all these guys coming up the ladder.
Well, it's part of the game. It's what I signed up for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I didn't want to do it, I wouldn't do it. You know, I knew that, you know, one day I would be the champ, and I knew there were people that were coming for my belt.
Yeah.
I understand that. And, you know, there's a lot of good guys out there that, I mean, you know, like, you know, fighting JDS, fighting over in Verdum, you know, Nagano.
Right.
I mean, they all want a piece of it. You know, I understand. Like, no matter who it is, it's not even just me. It's just whoever. Maybe when Kane was fighting, you know, over Verdum, you know, I ever wanted a piece of the title.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing, too, because what we're seeing today with MMA, we're seeing this combination, like this marriage of fighting with promotion.
I can't do it.
Yeah, you're not that guy.
I hate it.
But you not being that guy is promotable. This is what it's like. It's almost like, no, first of all, I don't think the UFC has enough resources to promote every fighter adequately, because I think UFC is a promotional entity, but it's also like the sanctioning body, you know, like not the sanctioning body, but they're the ones who put on the fights. They're the ones who decide who fights, and you've got a 500 fighter roster, whereas like in other organizations, you'd have a you know, you would have a bunch of different venues and avenues for different fighters could go. When a guy like you is the heavyweight champion, blue-collar guy, works as a firefighter, you know, you got a great story, you're a fun guy. Like, does it frustrate you that people expect you to talk shit and get – I mean, you're seeing all these guys that are getting a lot of attention now for it. Obviously, Conor's the master at it, right?
Yeah.
But you're seeing other guys that are, you know, trying that route, trying to say outrageous shit to try to get attention, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to be a copycat. I mean, right. Plus, it's too exhausting for me to figure out what I'm going to say and, like, what I want to say and hurt someone's feelings. I don't care. Like,
right.
I got more important shit to worry about. Like, I got, like, my kitchen I had to figure and fix that. Like, I didn't worry about that. I didn't worry about, like, what the next guy I was going to fight was going to say or was going to say about it. Like,
right.
I'm good, man. Like, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm going to go on there. I'm going to beat your ass. I'm going to walk out. I'm going to be champ.
I'm torn because on one hand, I'm like, I love a good shit-talking session. I like shit-talking.
Like, listen, if it's the fire station all day, man, I'll shit-talk the best of them, you know? But, like, I just don't want to go out of my way and just hurt someone's feelings I don't even know.
Yeah, but, like, Colby Covington, like, he's making a name for himself, but he's making a name for himself not just beating good guys like Damian Maia, but talking mad shit.
Yeah.
Like, talking shit in Brazil. And you see when Fabricio Verdum hit him in the head with a bang boomerang?
Does he have to go to court for that? I think he's got to go to court for that. Like,
he should let
weeks.
It go. He's got to fly all the way to Australia to go to court for that?
That's crazy.
So let it go. Come on. Fucking boomerang.
Yeah.
He wasn't trying to hit him. Nah. I mean, he wasn't trying to kill him. He just threw whatever he had in his hands. I don't know.
It's pretty sweet, though.
I mean, give him a fine. Give him a little fine.
In Australia, right?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it's like hitting someone in the head with a koala bear, right? You got a bottle of Vegemite or something like that.
Oh, God. So, that stuff's so salty.
I like that stuff.
You like it?
Yeah, I do.
I never had it. I did it one time. It was so salty.
It's good with butter.
Is it?
Yeah, with butter on bread. But the thing, like, has there been any pressure on you to try to talk some shit, to try to, like, promote things more?
No. I mean, they tell me, like, you know, you're your own promoter. I'm like, well, okay.
That's what they say to you? Okay. Like, how does the UFC say it? Like,
I don't know. Like, I don't really care what, you know, they think want me to do. Like, promote. I'm not going to promote myself. Like, I'm,
right.
Like, that's what you guys are in a promoting company. That's what you're supposed to do. You guys do that. You know, I just, you know, I think they'd rather, you know, 50-50 with it, but I don't see it that way.
Well, I think they would rather someone who just promotes themselves. Like, Conor McGregor is a perfect example,
yeah.
But he's a fucking unicorn.
Yeah.
Like, every
he's
now
amazing.
And then,
yeah.
One guy comes along that has, first of all, he has an entire country behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never seen anything like that. Like, Ireland's not a big country, but it seems like they're the biggest country in the world when Conor's fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fighting in Vegas against an American, and there's more Irish people in the audience. I mean, that's just bananas, right? Yeah. But when they got a guy like that, they kind of get spoiled. Like, hey, this is how you got to do it. You got to do it like Conor does it. Well, not everybody's Conor, you know? So, like, for a guy like you to see all these guys getting a lot of attention, and they're very good fighters as well, in Conor's case, great fighters as well. But the thing is the shit-talking. Like, that's sort of what's ramping everything up. That's what's getting all these people to buy the pay-per-view. Right.
Yeah. I mean, if someone came at me, you know, of course I'm going to defend myself. I'm pretty witty.
Right.
You know, I'm a fireman. I get shit talked to every day by, you know, five or six guys. So, like, but like I said, like, I just want to go out of my way and just, I have other stuff to worry about, like, training wise. And, like, what am I going to tweet today? What am I going to
Right.
Just, it's too much.
Made Chael Sonnen's career.
Yeah. I mean,
other than being a great fighter. But
yeah,
it did. Chael's, like, career really took off when he started talking shit. If people remember Chael in the early days of his career, he was a gentleman. He never talked shit.
Yeah.
Then somewhere along the line, he's like, Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck.
And that's
like,
my belt.
And it's like a WWE promotion.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's going crazy. And Chael took it to a new level. Like, Chael opened up the door to a lot of shit talkers of the modern era. He really let them know, like, look, that guy promoted the fuck out of fights.
Did he, like, take classes or anything like that? I'm not trying to be funny. Like, I mean,
Chael's very smart.
Yeah,
you ever talk to him?
No, yeah, he's very intelligent, yeah.
Very smart.
I did a couple of his radio shows.
Exceptionally smart and very articulate, he's got a great vocabulary and just knows.
See right there, I have no vocabulary, I'm not articulate, I'm screwed.
But you're you. I think I've always said that, like, people just need to, it's almost like there's no way, I mean, other than, like, maybe having a podcast or something like that, there's no, and I know that Tyron does that now. Tyron Woodley has his own podcast, and I think a couple other guys maybe as well, but it's hard. It's hard for people to get to know you. All they see is this stoic fireman who goes out there and fucks people up. You know, they're not, which should be enough.
Who doesn't want that?
That's what I say. It should be enough. But it's like, it's hard. I think it's hard for the UFC to figure out how to promote everybody.
No, yeah, I understand. I mean, there's, like you said, there's 500 people on the roster and all that. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah, whatever. It is what it is. What are you going to do?
Well,
can't make everyone happy. Well, I think the embedded helped me out a little bit.
Yes. The embedded's are great.
I think those help me out a little bit, too.
They help you out a lot. Yeah, no, they get a chance to see loose. Who you really are.
The last thing I was living in the comments. It's either I'm too loose or my wife's got a fat ass.
Both might be true.
Yeah, this is true.
But there's nothing wrong with, first of all, I can't read the comments.
Oh, I love it. I laugh.
Do you?
I laugh.
They don't freak you out?
Back in the day when I lost a stream or anything, like, I was like, people would write me like novels to tell how bad of a person I was. I should kill myself. I was the worst fighter in America. And I was in the world. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And my wife's like, stop reading it. So I deleted my Facebook account, my personal.
Did you?
Yeah, I deleted it. And then I had my epiphany. I said, screw it. I don't care anymore. So now, if you watch my Instagram once in a while, some dude tagging me or something, he'll be like, what's up, Joe? What's up, say something stupid. Like, he was right. Like, you're a paper champion. I was like, he's like, he's a fake. He's a paper champion. I'm like, I know, dude, totally fake and a paper champion. Dude needs his ass beat. You know what I mean? That's what I'll put. And right. It's me. He's talking about me. And these guys are like, and they won't put a word. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, come back with me something, man. Right. Like, you know, like, so I just, like, no, I don't care. I just laugh at it. I just think it's funny as shit. You know?
But isn't it kind of a waste of energy to engage with those people, or you actually enjoy it?
I actually enjoy it.
But
I
see,
think
you know what the difference is?
Half of the people that usually hit me up on a message, and they'll be like, bro, I just love you, champ. I just wanted to get a reaction out of you. I'm like, oh, you're that guy.
That guy.
Yeah.
Those guys are the saddest.
Yeah.
But it's also like after this true fight, you were at your lowest. So you're reading comments when you actually lost. Now you're reading comments when you're the heavyweight champion of the world. It's like, what are you going to say, bitch?
Yeah, it's true.
What the fuck are you going to say? You know?
Kiss the rain.
The worst thing, you know, they could say is they can't say anything. You're the champ.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to lose someday. Oh. Like, that's the worst thing they could say.
Yeah, probably. But,
most likely. Yeah. I mean, if you keep going, eventually, you'd be 80.
Yeah,
someone's going to kick your ass.
That's
going to
suck.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, if you keep going, will lose, including Mayweather, including everybody who's ever lived. If you keep going long enough.
Yeah.
Father Time will kick your ass.
100%.
And someone will be there to help him out.
Fuck, I go mow my 3 acres once a week, and I'm like, I get done, I'm like, oh.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
You're still all right. You still got a couple of years. Heavyweights, they say, mature later in life.
Yeah, not when I cut the grass, bro. I feel like I'm 95, man. I get done, and my back is like tight and sore. I'm like, God dang.
From cutting grass?
Yeah. I got a big skag, man. I fly around, I get done, and I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, like everything hurts. I'm like,
what's a big skag?
It's a 61-inch, like. It's like a commercial lawnmower.
Oh, you got one of them bad boys? Yeah, seems like fun.
Oh, it flies.
But that hurts your back?
Yeah, because I'm always bouncing. Like, you know, it's not perfect level sometimes.
The fucking daily grind of MMA training, like what that's got to be doing to your body. Yeah. Like when you were talking about how you barely get out of bed, like some days, most people would think, like they see you fighting, like this fucking guy's just doing cartwheels all around his house all day. And
it's so bad. Like I wake up in the morning and my wife's like, hey. I'm like, hey, should I give me a coffee? I'm like,
She wants you to get her a coffee?
Yeah, it's what I do for her.
Who's the fucking champ?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Who's the champ?
Like, I'm fourth in my house.
The champ doesn't get coffee.
I'm like fourth in my house, man. It's like her, the dogs, and me. Like, I'm there to pay the bills, man.
I think that's good for you, though. I really do. I think that's healthy. Just like have somebody you got to answer to sometimes.
I love it. Honestly, like, you know, she takes care of me, man. She does a lot for me, and so it's the least I can do for her. You know, I mean, yeah. She's a good woman. Like I said, we had that the big storm. I had no idea what to do. She called insurance. She screened with them. Got more shit than we needed. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's fine. They gave me like a little check, and I've been fine with it.
You should film like you getting out of bed in the morning. Maybe you should do something like that for like Instagram. Do like an Instagram video. Here we go. I mean, people just don't know because all they're seeing is you KOing Fabricio Werdum, knocking out Junior Dos Santos, raising your hands, you know, all of the glory moments. I think that's one of the things that Embedded does really well is they show like, hey, this is a fucking grind for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks until you get into a cage for a fist fight. And this is a fucking brutal way to get by in life.
And it can go 30 seconds. Or in 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Which, of course, rather go 30 seconds and win, but.
Yeah, maybe they should do something like that for this fight. Like, really, like, follow you from beginning to end. Like, see what it's like when you're getting up in the morning and then just put it together for something after the fight.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I mean, it sucks some days, man. You know, like, you know, some days I'm all right. But other days I'm like, God damn, I'm so smart. Like, you know what I mean? Like, man, this sucks. Like, I sleep wrong. Like, Unfortunately, we let the dog sleep in bed with us. So like,
oh, no.
I get like 1/8 of the bed. I have a king-size bed. So my wife sprawled out.
Like a skydiver.
Yeah. I'm like, honey, can I have some covers, please? You know, like, yeah.
And then the dog's a fart in your face.
Last night was so bad, man. Primo, God, that dude hot stinks last night.
Yeah, I had her move. My dog was watching TV with me last night, farting up a storm. Like, dude, it's not cool.
It's the worst.
But do you how do you know when to call it? Like, if you get up in the morning and you're like real fucking sore and you just can't, how do you know when, like, maybe I should take today off?
I usually know by that night, the night before.
Yeah.
I talk to my coaches, you know, and, you know, they'll be like, hey, how do you feel? And just how my sparring goes and stuff like that, or grappling, whatever I do, some type of my condition, like my sparring session, if it's, you know, MMA, kickboxing, or boxing, or jiu-jitsu, whatever it is. They just watch me, and they're like, how are you feeling? I'm like, oh, I feel like shit. And they're like, all right, you know what, just take tomorrow off and leave it at that. Or just take half a day and then work out at night.
And when you do take a day off, do you do, like, ice baths? Or, like, how do you try to accelerate the recovery?
Yeah, usually, like, ice bath, Epsom salt or something. I sleep all day. I literally just eat and sleep all day. Just sleep. Just catch up on rest.
Yeah. It's good. It's interesting, though, because there's no real set thing where you can know when to do it and when not to. You've got to do it all by feel.
Yeah. I think just knowing your body. I think it's one thing I've picked up well on since I've started fighting, is just knowing my body. Because, you know, I think you're the best critic on your body, because, like, you can't, like, back in the day we used to do caveman training, you know, like, I feel fine, you know, I'm fine. But here's another thing, too, is, like, we're so used to training a certain way. You can get through those workouts even if you're tired and sore, but I can go and pick up a bag of groceries and blow up my back.
Right, right.
Like, you know, or pick up a baby or put on my shoe. Like, I never have it, but you do random stuff that you don't do every day. Like, you know, you pick up a bag of groceries, you're like, oh, my back, oh, and your back goes out. But then I can go and spar five-minute rounds, and my body's dead, but I can make it through just because I'm so used to my body being, you know, right, going through it. Which,
yeah, that's the weirdest thing, right? Was you do the most ridiculous hardcore shit, and then, like, you just go to tie your shoes wrong, and something tweaks.
Yeah,
like, what is that? Like, what's causing that?
Actually, after my Overeem fight, we're sitting there, and we're on a boat with my buddy. We're on with his parents. We're hanging out. We're just, you know, a couple cocktails, a little day drinking. We're hanging out, driving around Brown Stadium in the water, and he has this little, like, 4-pound dog. I was like, oh, what's up, little girl? How you doing? I go to pick her up, and I'm like, and my back went out.
After the fight?
Yeah, it's after the fight. That's like a week later.
How crazy is that?
I was like, oh. But it didn't, like, go fully, like, I felt it. I'm like, okay, we're good. So then a couple of days later, I didn't do anything for a couple of days later. So I went to spar and hit a double leg. My pinched the nerve in my back, and went. I was out for a whole week.
That's crazy. From picking up a dog.
4-pound dog. I'm fucked up, man. It's like, what the... I mean, I get punched in the face by a massive man, and then this little dog fucks me up.
I was going to Vegas once for a K-1 bout way back in the day. There was some K-1 fights in Vegas we're going to go watch. And I'm in the shower on the way to, like leave the house. I'm, like, taking a shower. Oh, this is going to be fun. Can't wait to see these fights. And I just turned to grab the soap, and pop, something popped in my neck. I was like, fuck, out of nowhere. So I drove to Vegas like this the entire way, like 4 hours. And every time I had to turn, like, to look behind me to park, I had to literally turn my whole body like this from just turning to grab shampoo or something. Like, just turning. Pop. Ah! Like, no idea what it was. Doesn't make any sense.
But just turn around and just...
Every now and then. And it fucked me up for like 2 weeks. For like 2 weeks, my neck was fucked.
Oh,
doesn't make any sense.
Did you get adjusted?
No, didn't get adjusted.
I was trying.
Maybe I should have gone to a chicken doctor. They kill a fucking duck and whack it over my head. Some voodoo shit. I mean, look, mate, I'm not saying that going to a chiropractor is a bad thing. With some people, I'm sure it works. But when you know the history of what it, like, how it got started,
I didn't know that.
It's a little wacky.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's some pretty good articles about how wacky it is.
I look into it.
But there's a lot of, like, it's interesting because there's a lot of methods of recovery that some people swear by, like the cupping thing or like electrical muscular stimulation. Or you ever see those Normatec boots? They put those things on your legs. Have you ever used those?
Mm-mm.
No?
Hang upside down?
No.
Oh.
They're like you're putting on pants. They go all the way up your legs.
Oh, yeah,
they squeeze
the
your legs.
For circulation?
Yeah, they have like... They're supposed to be really good for recovery.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting how so many of these things, it's like they're just trying things out and they're trying to figure out, like, what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
you know?
Yeah, when I had knee surgery, they had this awesome like contraption like wrapped around your leg, and she's like, how like compressed you want them? Eventually we'll get it tight. So she gets it tight now, so the cold water comes through and it gets super tight and constricts it and pushes all the bad blood in. You know, it's awesome. I love it.
What'd you have done with your knee?
It's a scope.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my fifth one. So.
Fifth one?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
On the same knee?
No, I had two on my right and three on my left. Yeah.
It's tough being a big guy.
I'm going to be crippled when I get older.
Do you run?
I do. I use an anti-gravity treadmill.
What's an anti-gravity treadmill?
So I put on these super tight things, and I zip myself up, and you can go like half your body weight, 60% of your body weight, whatever. And you hit
the
button.
In the water? Is that what it is?
It's air, and it lifts me up.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's pretty badass, yeah.
What's the benefit of that?
Just so I don't pound my feet as much.
That it right there?
Yep, that's it.
Whoa. So it doesn't pound your feet.
Because I'm 240 pounds, so right. I'm going to kill my feet and my leg and my knees. So it lifts me up, makes it a little bit easier.
But does it? It can't possibly be giving you as hard a workout,
though.
Oh,
definitely. I'm running at 9.5 miles per hour.
Right, but you're running at 9.5 miles per hour at less than your body weight.
Yeah, I'm still running at 200-some pounds instead of 240.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So if I go half my weight, I'm running 120 pounds, and then 75%, I'm running like 200 some pounds, whatever it is. It still works. I get a great sweat. I'm still breathing hard. You know what I mean? I'm still pushing myself.
Is that like one of your main forms of cardio?
Yeah, that, and I do like a lot of pad work. At the sparring. So I get done with sparring, I do my rounds, and I get done. I do either pad work for like 20 minutes straight. Right after, and then I do some sticks with my coach, working my head movement and mm-hmm. just keep my stance.
Oh, the foam
yeah.
sticks?
Yeah, well, whatever they made some weird contraption, probably. I have no idea.
Any other machines, like a VersaClimber or anything, swimming? Do you do any swimming?
No.
No?
No, I do a lot of wrestle. I started doing wrestling here soon.
So mostly a lot of it is old school training.
Yeah.
Which is probably the best way anyway.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I run twice a week, though, for sure. There's no question. I like running just because, I run hard on Mondays, and then Fridays is more of a recovery run. Let my body rest.
But you're doing it in this thing. You're not running on the concrete.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like running. I think it feels so much better in my legs. I feel 100 times better.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, especially when you're dealing with 240 pounds, pounding on your knees, and you've scoped out all the cartilage and shit.
Yeah, it sucks.
They're doing some stuff now, though. You should look into, talk to Dr. Davison from the UFC.
Yeah.
They're shooting stem cells into knees and regenerating cartilage and meniscus tissue.
Hmm. I'll check into that for sure. I mean, I definitely want to get knee replacement when I'm older, so.
Knee replacement?
I don't want to have that.
Oh, no, I don't want that.
Yeah, exactly.
No. I don't think you're going to have to do that anymore. I think soft tissue stuff, they're going to be able to fix that.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. They're pretty damn close. They're able to do some pretty incredible shit now.
Yeah.
And
at least they can grow your teeth now.
Really?
Yeah, my wife just posted. Hold on.
They grow your teeth.
They can grow your teeth, like the PRP, like something like that.
Whoa.
Hold on a second.
Really?
Yeah.
Jamie will find it. They can grow your teeth.
Yes.
Yeah, I found something about this couple months ago. They put a little scaffolding of some kind, and then they use some injection to regrow teeth. I don't know if it's in full use yet, but it's definitely on the way if it's not.
They're going to be able to grow all kinds of shit. They're going to be able to grow body parts. Our great-grandchildren, they're going to cut their hands off and grow new ones if they don't think they look good.
Yeah.
Kid's going to be like, my hands looked ugly. I wanted long, slender fingers, so I cut them off. Like that.
Oh.
Yeah. That's the world we're going to be living in.
100%. Yeah, it's going to be superficial.
Well, not just superficial, but bizarre. You're going to be able to, they've already regenerated a bunch of different body parts. This one woman had bladder cancer. And so they made her a new bladder with her own skin. They used her own skin and used stem cells and grew her bladder in a petri dish and then put it back in her body.
And works great.
Works.
Now.
I don't know how great it is. I haven't talked to her about her pee. The promise of growing new teeth. Dental stem cells could revolutionize treatment for patients who face extractions. Wow. Growing new teeth. Fuck, what a weird world we're living in.
Right?
That's got to feel good for you, though, to be thinking about the future. All the stuff you're doing to yourself right now, all the injuries and getting banged up.
Yeah.
And be able to squirt some stuff in there and fix everything.
I'm cool with that.
You good with it?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right, Steepy. So January 20th, everybody should watch UFC Heavyweight Championship live from Boston, Massachusetts. I'll be there. I can't wait. Good luck to you, brother.
Hey.
Thanks for doing the show, man.
No,
really
thanks for having
it.
Me, man.
Glad
great.
We had you on.
No, for sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stipe Miocic, heavyweight champ of the world. Let these bitches know.
What?
Let them know. Cleveland's in the house.
OHIO. thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, brother.
I know. I-